Warning, the following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you Sports Whispers Weekly, where we talk nothing but sports for the duration of the show. And as a reminder, if you haven't subscribed to the Missy AE podcast, you can do so by going to blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE, or you can subscribe at any of our major podcast networks, that being iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and pretty much any major podcast network. More than likely, we are listed there. We have a lot to get to tonight. First off, obviously, we will discuss a little bit more about the Vince McMahon debacle that is going on right now in professional wrestling. We have the NFL Conference Finals to discuss, as well as perhaps a season-altering injury to Joel Embiid, which I'm sure is going to definitely draw it's definitely going to draw a lot of interest from Philadelphia fans. We also have some more news involving the NFL coaching cycle, as well as the MLB offseason to discuss as well. So I kind of figured we would get started off first tonight with some breaking news out of the world of hockey, as we do have two trades to talk about here. Let me bring in Lou, because Lou, this is perhaps maybe the perfect topic to start off tonight's show to discuss.
Yes.
We have some big trades that went down in the world of professional hockey this week. First off, with the Vancouver Canucks, they have acquired Elias Lindholm from the Calgary Flames in exchange for Andre Kuzmenko, Hunter Brustewich, and Joni Germo, as well as a first-round pick this year and a conditional fourth-round pick in 2024. This has also been confirmed on the side of the Calgary Flames as well. Elias Lindholm, you know, he's turned into quite the effective two-way threat across the league, being a part of the Flames organization for the better parts of six seasons. In a total of 418 regular season games, he has scored 148 goals and 357 points in the process. His best offensive output came during the 2021-2022 season, where he scored 42 goals and recorded 82 points in all 82 games played. This, in my opinion, Lou, is maybe the biggest deal that has taken place this past week, because the Canucks are, you know, they're in the best spot that they've been in since they made the Stanley Cup final in 2011,
right,
where they ultimately ended up losing to the Boston Bruins. But,
exactly.
You know, they arguably get perhaps the top center on the trade market in Lindholm. And there was a rumor, excuse me, that the Boston Bruins were involved involving Elias Lindholm, and that a deal was in place. However, Lindholm did not want to sign an extension, or they couldn't come to terms, basically, when it comes to extension talks.
Say, why wouldn't he want an extension, even, unless he has something wrong, unless he has some kind of vendetta against the team? But I get if they couldn't come to agreement, yeah, I would understand that. But just to say, no, I want an extension, the hell of that. I mean, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Now, however, though, you know, this he does bring to Vancouver limited postseason experience. Over five full seasons in Calgary, he only took part in three of those seasons in when it comes to the postseason. He scored 8 goals and 17 points, as well as a 55.5% success rate off of the faceoff. which is a bit of an improvement over his 53% regular season average throughout his career. So for a team like Vancouver, who is currently on top of the Pacific Division with 71 points, and actually they're on top of the West in general, they're on top of the Western Conference. What are your thoughts on Vancouver's chances following this deal?
I think it's only making stronger. You know, look at what they've done so far. I mean, you know, they haven't done well much in seasons past. But now with the trade and the way they're going so far, I think they're making a much stronger team and a very dangerous team as we now head into the later half of the year. So, I thought the Jets were going to run away with it, you know, the way they were doing so well not that long ago, but the Canucks have now put up and they're looking to try and get back to glory. They're like in 94 in 2011. So, time will tell. Because the thing that always gets me about the trade is that when you trade someone who has been an asset to your team and then you get somebody else to come up from it, you know, that kind of just changes the whole aspect of how your season might go. I mean, one minute you might be on top in television, but then you make this trade and like, maybe we're in the wrong deal here, and now you're sinking down the standings. You know, sometimes, you know, one player, one trade can change the whole thing. And that's what I was seeing.
Right.
I was thinking the same thing when the Rangers in 94, they traded one of their good players over to Chicago. And I'm like, okay, we were having this great season. Looked like we could make the Stanley Cup. Like, we got this schmuck. Oh, terrific. Luckily, it didn't turn out that way. And switching gears slightly for a second, back in 1993, early 94, November 93, the Knicks made a trade to send Derek Harper over to Dallas. Now, the Dallas Mavericks were not a great team at that time. Believe me, they were. They just suck. And the Knicks were on a roll. Their best season since probably 73. I'm thinking, we're going to get Harper? Okay, our season's going to hell. That's it. We're done. Little did I know that how they were able to come through for us, and we are all the way to the finals. We lost against Houston, but at least, you know, it didn't have to be such a bad trade after all. You never know. Sometimes it can go in your favor. Other times, it could be a shithole, and your team will suffer, and your team will suffer the rest of the season. Say, like the Detroit Pistons, who have been awful since day two. So, you know, it kind of, you know, can go either way.
Right, yeah. It definitely can go either way, depending on what happens the rest of the season.
Yeah.
But I think the one way I look at it is this. Calgary right now is well out of a playoff spot in the Western Conference. And they're looking at it as, okay, you know, Elias Lindholm is obviously our greatest asset that we have to trade. What can we get for him in order to justify getting rid of him? And, you know, I mean, you take a look at the players that they've gotten rid of over the past couple of years. You know, they're clearly headed towards a rebuild. And, you know, in all honesty, chances are this is definitely going to transfer over to when it comes to putting together, a rebuilding team. And, I mean, you take a look at the players that they got in return. You know, Hunter Brustowicz is considered to be, at the time he was drafted, he was considered to be one of the top defensive prospects of that draft. So, you know, Vancouver paid a pretty hefty price.
Yes.
For this deal. And as far as Kuzmenko goes, you know, I mean, he's having a down season, eight goals, 13 assists. So, you know, that was, if anything, that was just, that was to justify, okay, you know, you're giving us a main roster player. We'll give you a main roster player in return. So that, you know, you may not necessarily have to ruin any of your prospect development by calling them up earlier than they should. Now, It's funny you mentioned Winnipeg, because Winnipeg made a trade of their own this past week, trading a first-round pick in this year's draft to go along with a third-round pick in 2027, which will go to Montreal if the Jets win the Cup this year. And in return, Winnipeg acquired Sean Monahan, who is having a I guess you could say a career resurgence ever since going to Montreal. And you know, now all of a sudden he adds to that Winnipeg center core as they prepare, because currently they sit third in the Central Division, which is good enough for a playoff spot right now. Comfortably, right. About 11 points ahead of St. Louis. So this just further bolsters their center core heading into the home stretch here. Obviously, once the All-Star Week festivities wrap up here, what are your thoughts on Winnipeg bolstering up their center core?
The idea now, because I really thought they were going to take it at first, but you know, now that Vancouver's catch up, they got to have the ball sorted up. You know, they want to stay in contention.
Right. Doesn't it seem like it's we're almost starting to see a little bit of an arms race here? Like Vancouver goes out and gets Lindholm, so now Winnipeg has to go out and get Monahan. Literally, the top two centers on this trade market have now all of a sudden been traded within a couple of days of each other. And from what it sounds like there's quite a bit left to go still on here when it comes to potential trade bait on this open market. I mean, just taking a look at some of the other players that are in play, you know, Calgary, they still have to offload Chris Tanev, which they'll probably do. He's a free agent, so, you know, they're going to want to get what they can for him before the season's over. Some other players that are listed on the market, Vladimir Tarasenko, he's a free agent as well. Sean Walker from Philadelphia, he will be a free agent. Anybody that's in the defensive market, you know, they'll look to potentially grab a righty like Walker or a righty like Chris Tanev. You know, Jake Allen, he has about 1 year left on his deal, so he'll basically be under contract next year. He is available when it comes to the goaltending market out of Montreal. And obviously, Vancouver, they traded away their first rounder, so that's off the table. Jacob Chychrun is another guy who's listed as available, and he literally was just traded like either last year or the year before. So, you know, right now, there's quite a few people on this list that could potentially really benefit a playoff, an upcoming playoff team, so to speak, depending on who ends up being dealt. You know, just looking at some of the players who have already been dealt, you know, Elias Lindholm, Sean Monahan, they were number one and number three on TSN's trade bait list. Andre Kuzmenko, he was number nine on their trade bait list. And Vancouver's first round pick was ranked number 11. So, you know, there's still a whole bunch of talent yet to be dealt here. You know, Adam Henrique, that's another guy. You want to talk about centers? 15 goals so far this year, and he's a free agent at the end of the year. You know, if there's a team that's in need of a center, obviously the thing that's being held back right now is the fact that is, you know, he's worth 5.8 mil against the cap. So that's kind of affecting teams that want to potentially go after him. Right. Jake Guentzel is another one with 22 goals. You know, Pittsburgh having a disastrous season this year.
Yes.
For a team that is trying to put together one last run for Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, you know, they go out and acquire Erik Karlsson in the offseason. And, you know, you have Jake Guentzel, who at the age of 29 is putting up maybe perhaps his best season of his career so far. So
yes.
Odds are you could potentially see him potentially get moved out of Pittsburgh, depending on when it comes leading up to the deadline here, where they stand. Because right now they're about, let's see, 51 points. So they're about 7 points out of a playoff spot right now.
Mm.
Or 5 points if you count the divisional race. They're 5 points behind Philly for the number three spot in the Metropolitan Division, but in terms of the wild cards, they're 7 points behind. So there's still especially with John Henry being at the helm of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And, you know, everybody laughs at me. Everybody laughed at me when I said that enjoy your last few months of Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin all on the same roster. But let's be honest, John Henry doesn't like to spend money. Matter of fact, all he wants to do is save money. And if they don't have a competitive team out there, huh?
Doesn't help your cause, does it?
Exactly, it doesn't. You know, if you have a team that has two bona fide stars like that, and they're not playoff contenders, there's a very distinct possibility you could potentially see one or maybe both of them get moved. I know how sacrilegious it would be to see either of them get moved, considering they've been Pittsburgh Penguins pretty much their entire career. But, you know, ultimately, all Henry cares about is saving money. And considering the contracts that both Crosby and Malkin have against the cap, that would be – and plus, not to mention, they would get a haul for either one if they were to trade them.
It seems like Malkin's thrown off the head. How long has he been in the league now anyway? He's been around quite a while now.
Malkin, I believe he's 1 year older than Crosby.
Yeah, because Malkin goes in the league quite a while now.
Yeah, Malkin, let's see, when did he debut in the league? He came into the league in 2006-2007, and actually, I think that's the same. No, actually, he came into the league after Crosby. Crosby came in 2005-2006. So Crosby was already in the league for a year before Malkin ended up coming in.
Yeah, it seems like Malkin's been around forever.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it definitely seems like it in both situations actually. You know, one player I'm seeing here on this list, considering I know you're a New York Rangers fan, is Kaapo Kakko, who hasn't had the season that everybody was hoping he would have, only 5 goals and 6 points.
Yeah.
Now, granted, he's still only 22, but I remember discussing this during the off season on this podcast, what the Rangers would potentially have to do, whether or not they would bring Kaapo Kakko back. And honestly, from the sounds of it, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they just decide to cut bait at this point. I mean, even though he's only 22, he's not showing the development that he should be showing at this point in his career.
Yeah,
and
despite the fact that he's in first place, Kakko seems to be the weakest part of the team now. So they're gonna have with the trade deadline next month, I think they're gonna make some moves. I think Kakko is on the top of that list.
Yeah, it definitely seems like he's definitely on the top of that list when it comes to when it comes to potential trade bait out of New York involving the Rangers. Let's bring you in, Alex. Alex, we've been discussing the NHL trade deadline coming up, and in particular, we've been going down the list of names. We've already had two people be taken off of the market so far, in Elias Lindholm and Sean Monahan. What are your thoughts, Alex, on the way that this NHL trade market has really developed so far?
Well, yes, it's starting to heat up, which is always fascinating. I love this time of the year for any respective pro team. I always think it's fascinating. But that's why I was kind of confused before. You were talking about predictions for next year. Like, you never know, because there's so many different moves that are about to be made.
Yeah.
So it's always a fun time of the year. I'm going to be interested to see what the Rangers do. I think the Bruins might make a couple moves. The Devils are always in the mood to make some moves, so it should be fascinating to watch.
Yeah, and matter of fact, one of the moves that I know that the Bruins have to decide what to do is they have to decide whether or not to trade Jake DeBrusk or potentially extend him. And if they can't sign him to an extension, it sounds like that a trade may potentially take place, especially with him coming into form over the last season and a half here.
Sure.
So it should be interesting going down the line the further that we go into this deadline. But I kind of figure that we should move away a little bit, because obviously there's going to be more deadline talk if anything obviously comes up over the range of this night, because considering how news has basically been filtering in, you never know what the hell is going to come up during this show. But I figure we should probably move on to the NBA, because we have a breaking injury, so to speak. Luka Doncic apparently has re-aggravated his right ankle injury in tonight's game. And from what it sounds like, he was able to walk off on his own power, but considering how teams have been handling recent injury problems, which, I mean, there's a few that we will touch on in a minute here, it kind of seems like maybe perhaps, considering how crucial Luka Doncic is to the Dallas Mavericks, that
Absolutely.
maybe perhaps they may go the route of potentially resting him.
Lou, I don't know if you want to chime in, but yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I think it'd be, he's such a focal point and such a primary target for everyone. The bullseye's on his back.
Complete asset.
If he's banged up, if you start, especially what we're at, the All-Star break, it's not going to get any better. So he's got to rest up. I'll give him 2 weeks off.
He better.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Actually, wait a minute. He did come back out. So I stand corrected. So he came back out, and he apparently scored 11 straight points. So that ankle must not be if it's re-aggravated, it must not be bothering him that much. It's interesting, though, that they're playing without Kyrie Irving. I didn't know that Kyrie was injured.
Yeah, he's been MIA for a couple of days now, a couple of weeks, I think. But it's always going to be Luka's ship. I was just along for the ride. Who knows
right.
what he's up to? And honestly, Kyrie's so erratic. I think that's one of the reasons that Cuban sold the majority of the share of his ownership. Probably realized that was just a bad, you know, once Kyrie came on board, I don't know. But, I mean, Luka's just, you guys saw he had 73 points the other night. Luka's just out of this world. He's insanely good.
Well, don't forget, though, you know, Cuban is an opportunist. And if he sees a way for him to make maximum profit, he's going to do whatever needs to be done. So with him selling off a majority of his shares, if anything, to me, that just yeah. tells me that he determined that the time was right for him to basically cash out while still holding control of the Dallas Mavericks organization.
Yeah, yeah, and he hasn't gone public. I don't think he'll ever say, you know what, it's too much of a headache with Kyrie. Cuban's a lot more savvy than I am, so it's like whatever instinct that guy has and whatever move he makes, I'm just going to say, you know what, it's probably a smart move.
Yeah.
So I don't know what else. He's always got a million different things going on, so, you know, it definitely wasn't necessarily because of Kyrie. I just don't think I think he definitely realized that Kyrie wasn't the best person in the world once he got him to Dallas.
What are your thoughts on this, Lou? You know, Kyrie Irving, they did all they could to sign him to an extension this past offseason, which of course they ended up doing. But now it kind of seems like maybe perhaps Kyrie Irving is up to his same old shenanigans, you know, being out
obviously,
the last couple
yeah.
of games. I mean, could we
definitely.
Be seeing the usual Kyrie meltdown that we see almost every single season?
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it. It's bound to happen. I mean, Kyrie is what he is, so at least he thinks he is what he is, and he's just going to cause more shenanigans as the season goes on. I mean, they really should do something about him, though. I mean, he is really becoming a – he is – well, he's not becoming – actually, he is a problem. And he's just gotten worse. Ever since, you know, like 2001 with his little fake sicknesses and whatnot, I mean, he has been, you know, a complete troublemaker. Or make it this way, a total jackass. And it should have subscribed to that.
Yep. Total jackass.
And I don't think it will. You know,
Now we go from players that are having you know that have become problems for their teams. I'm looking at the scores right now, and what is going on with Golden State?
Yeah,
Golden State
for a long,
three games
for a long
below 500.
Yeah, I mean, Klay Thompson a shot. He's not even playing down the stretch of key games. Kerr's done with him.
You can't do that.
Start there. Draymond's a total head case. So, I mean, just do the math. It's the party's over in Golden State. They're not who they used to be, and they're older every year. The shine is off that diamond. They're really the Golden State is not relevant this year. They're in the risk of not even making the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, you take a look at
the defending champions. Well, not defending champ, but, you know.
The former champions.
Right, they were that one, you know, not that long ago, and now.
I mean, you take a look at who is out tonight. Chris Paul, obviously, with his hand injury, you know, he's going to be out for the foreseeable future. They don't have Moses Moody tonight. They don't have Gary Payton II tonight. You take a look at some of these stats. Andrew Wiggins, with that massive contract, only 2 points. Klay Thompson decided to not show up tonight, only 8 points. Steph Curry is pretty much their entire offense with 34.
Yeah.
And Draymond Green is being Mr. Triple or quadruple single that we're all used to seeing out of him. So, I mean, that's not much of a surprise. But it's almost like From all reports that have come out, they have basically said that they're hanging on to Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. So,
right. Wow.
It's almost like they're going off of nostalgia. I sort of feel.
Yeah, they really are. It's like the relationship that's over, or the job that's already been terrible, but people are not getting fired yet. It's like, you know, the writing's been on the wall. Very obvious. I think deep down, Steve Kerr knows it. But the owner, you know, you want to sell seats, you want to keep the fans captivated. So, but yeah, they just have not looked the same for about a year. But if the chickens have really come to roost this year, they just look they don't look good. They're sub 500. So I mean, the proof is in the pudding. It's in the results.
Yes. Now the only thing I'll say about that though is maybe it's because they're a half game out of the play-in tournament. We all know what happens if you make the play-in tournament. There's always a chance that you can run the board. So maybe perhaps they feel that Klay Thompson will come around once playoff time comes, that he'll magically turn himself back into the Splash Brother Klay Thompson instead of the Dud Brother that we've been seeing so far this season.
The Dud Brother.
Those days are done, man.
But
no, I mean, he can't come back from that injury. He's Kerr's not even playing him in the fourth. So it's like there's no way he's come. What is he going to start? Like, he's going to turn 40 suddenly and then start getting great again? Like, his career has been a real, real sharp decline. Nice guy, too. I'm not trying to bash the guy, but that's a big reason, obviously, one of the Splash Brothers. He's kind of cooked. He's done. So it's Steph on his own island. Steph is a small guy. Steph's, what, 34 years old? And a bunch of young teams love to beat the Warriors because they won all those rings. So they got a target on the back. It's not a good situation for Golden State.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, I don't think a lot of people want to really admit it, but it really does seem like they're getting closer and closer to rebuild time out there in Golden State. And also,
yeah.
I believe somebody that we've had previously on this show, Jim, I believe he said at one point that, with Oakland selling the Oakland Athletics, if Golden State fans want to keep their team in Golden State, they better continue going to the games. And, you know, the further that Golden State starts to slide here, you know, it really does make you wonder. Hopefully they're gonna still have the diehards, but I think it's really gonna test like who is really a fan and who was there just to be on the bandwagon. You know, because of all those reasons that they won those rings. You know, who is a diehard and who is going to stick with the team through thick and thin, and who is just, you know, who was just there just to be on the bandwagon, and now that they're struggling, you know they'll be like, oh well, we'll move on to the next great team. But speaking of big players, we do have a report from The Athletic that has said Joel Embiid has a meniscus injury, and in particular, if I can bring up this message here that I had with one of our Whispers moderators, they're calling it basically a flap of the meniscus. What the fuck is a flap?
Yeah. I never heard
that's
before.
Ridiculous.
That makes no sense whatsoever. What the fuck is a flap of the meniscus? It's either torn or it's not.
Yeah, or partially torn.
but they're calling it a displaced flap.
That's a new one.
It's coming out after the ad.
And, according to what it says here, from I know they say not to listen to Twitter doctors, but you know this is coming straight from an actual doctor to the athletes. He basically has said it's a terrible way to describe the injury to the public by the Philadelphia 76ers, and it doesn't help clarify anything. A displaced flap is a tear, not an injury. The meniscus is torn. If you tell a sports doc someone has a displaced flap, those are words we often use to describe something that needs surgery. If rest and rehab is still an option, then they really aren't communicating this in a good way. Whoever is communicating this.
No offense, but Steve, I mean, think about this is the franchise. No offense, but like that, think about it this way. I mean, that guy, think about it, trust the process. Ben Simmons, Embiid, for like a decade now, they've been so passionately invested and loyal to this guy. They're not going to show all their hands. They're not going to say that. They're not going to say too much about the guy's injury. Because also, he's had so many injuries. They're not going to come out and say, oh, this guy's – it's like Belichick used to do it like with the injury report every Sunday. I mean, they're not going to show their hand and right away go, this guy's screwed. They're going to – they're kind of being mysterious about it because they don't know whether or not he's going to have surgery. But if you look at his timeline of his history of injuries, it's just absolutely brutal. So they don't want to, like, say that he has to have something until they definitely know.
No.
I mean, I can't really fault him.
There's no need for them to say. Let's keep in mind too, when this injury is to a big man like Joel Embiid, we saw what happened when Time Lord Robert Williams suffered a torn meniscus for the Boston Celtics. He ended up having surgery. He came back just in time for the playoffs, and because Boston rushed him, he re-tore his meniscus once again, and was basically. You know, he's never been the same player since. And now, what happened this season? A torn meniscus, but this time on the other knee for him.
That definitely proves your point. But there's no need for them to say too much about the injury. What are they? They don't have to be like brutally honest. They're just playing it by ear. look at his history. His resume is just littered with injuries. So,
yeah.
How do they benefit from saying too much about his injury? They can keep their cards close to the vest.
Saying that, Lou? Because you're right, Lou. I am here.
Yeah. I forgot to mention. Diane was gonna be a little bit late, but she's here.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I could have sworn I saw her number pop up. Now. We do. Here's the thing that we have to keep in mind too. Obviously, Joel Embiid has a history with injuries, but you know he's in the middle of an MVP caliber season. You have to wonder what's the right route for Philly to take here, because you take a look at the standings. Philadelphia right now, they're in the number five spot. You know, they are solidly in a playoff spot right now, 12 games above 500. But with this type of injury, they claim that he will miss 4 to 6 weeks, supposedly, with rest and rehab. Now, obviously, if it's surgery, it'll be more like 4 to 6 months, not 4 to 6 weeks. To me,
exactly.
If it's a tear of the meniscus, it just doesn't really speak to me that it's going to be weeks. It feels like it would be more like months.
No, and they're not going to – I'll answer your question, the riddle right now. They're not going to do anything on the trade deadline. They're just hoping for the best with him. What are they going to do, move? They're not going to move Maxey. They don't have many number one picks, so they can't really – what, are they going to just beg someone to give a good player for free? They don't have many assets. So the Sixers are stuck in the bed they made. They don't have much ability to upgrade their roster. So they're going to just play it out with Max.
Oh,
they just got hammered.
Right.
But they,
I'm talking about the 76ers roster.
Yeah, the Philadelphia 76ers.
Okay, I'm right. Okay.
So, I mean, they just got matched by the Nets today. The Nets just beat them by 20 at home today. So, I mean, but they really can't do much. I mean, what they have to hope for the best and hope Embiid come back soon. He's their guy.
Yeah, with any luck. But you know what? Let's get the thoughts of someone that we haven't had on the show in quite a while. Jim Early, what are your thoughts on Philadelphia being without their big man for quite a while, it sounds like?
Well, I'm not a doctor, but I'm fixing to give you some information, so you can call me Dr. J, even though I'm not Julius Irving. A flap, as far as a meniscal flap, it's a tear.
Yeah.
And either there's certain degrees of how bad it could be, but normally it requires surgery because the tear has displaced the meniscus. So I don't know why they're wording it like they are, if they're just trying not to scare fans or whatever. I don't know why they chose the word flap. It's a tear is what it is.
Must be a new term.
Hey, Jim, and Jim, it's Al. What's up, bud? Yeah, just even like,
hey, how's it going, Alex? How you doing, Lou?
All right.
Going well. I mean, even just way back when, you know, Al Bundy here, but like playing college lacrosse, right? Obviously not anywhere near the NBA, but I tore an MCL in college, and I'm a much smaller guy than Embiid. You're looking at 3 or 4 months. And with his history of with his knee injuries, it's a lot worse. It's a lot worse. He's already very susceptible to a longer recovery, right? I mean, wouldn't you say his body's already been through the war? He's got a brittle.
Yeah, it has. And with him, I mean, it's all the way from his fingers and thumbs down to his knees and feet. I mean, he's constantly hurt. And, I mean, that happens to a lot of big guys. But his career in the NBA started off slower because of coming out of college injured.
Yeah.
Oh, he's
been doing it.
Yeah, I mean, he did. He had he had sort of the same thing, I think, as Odin, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. But, well, back years when they started saying trust the process because they could not get the guy healthy, he missed what? If you want to look it up, I mean, Embiid missed 80-90% of his first 2.5 years. It was a real struggle just to get the guy suited up. So really unfortunate, but it is what it is. He's got a history of really bad injuries. And the guy's 7'1", too. I mean, it just takes a toll.
Bigger they are, the harder they fall, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just really...
Joe Embiid is center for the 76ers.
Diane, I thought you were a fan of the 76ers.
Yeah, really.
Joel Embiid is the...
From what I'm reading, the only possible positive side to this is if the tear is on the outer, like, third of the meniscus, it could heal on its own, but would still need to be repaired surgically. So that's like best-case scenario.
Right. And there's no guarantee. There's no guarantee either that,
I don't know about y'all, but if I've got the MVP on my team and I'm hearing all this and hearing, well, maybe it could heal on his own and maybe he could, I'm shutting him down. I'm shutting him down and then he's going to have surgery. And
heck yeah.
You know.
Totally
agree, it's too big. It's too big an investment to play around with.
Yeah,
back to
what I said about Robert Williams. You know, take a look at what the Celtics did with Robert Williams. You know,
it's not like the Sixers are going to win the title anyway. So
no.
No. And with his history,
no, not
injuries,
with the roster
can't rush
the way
him back.
It is right now.
You, with his history of injuries, yeah. It's not going to end up a happy story. If you rush him back, it's been proven it's going to blow up again. And like Jim said, they're not winning at all. And Steve, to your point, I mean, Robert Williams got rushed back a couple times. Now he's facing back-to-back knee injuries on both knees. He can't even get on the court for the Blazers. So it's like
yeah.
they got to preserve yeah. whatever's left of Embiid at this point. You got to wrap him up in bubble wrap and just not play him right now.
Make him play like that. Make him play with bubble wrap.
yeah. And imagine, I mean, the guy's getting hammered every night. He's their offense with Maxie.
He'd probably still have a double-double.
yeah. That's the thing. It's a sensational player, man. I mean, Jimmy, you know KU, man. That's Will Chamberlainville. I mean, he was the next coming.
Yeah.
He's the best big man. I love Jokic, too. I love the Joker, but, I mean, Embiid is incredible. I just hope he gets healthy somehow again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, with any luck.
It's starting. I mean, unfortunately, it's starting to look like he's going to go down as being, you know, so good and probably one of the best Sixers ever, but never going to ever fulfill actually what potential he had, because he can be doing so much more if he'd stay unhurt, and they never surround him with enough right players. They throw people in there like when they went and got Harden and all these other people. They've never put the right mix around him. He's just going to retire someday and feel pretty disappointed about his career.
I mean, he's already pissed off at the fact that they've, you know, that they've squandered most of the time that he's had with them by, you know, making moves that they didn't have to make. And meanwhile, when they had moves that he wanted them to make, instead they decided to go elsewhere. You know, being the type of a businessman that Daryl Morey is, you know, obviously he's not going to listen to his best player on his roster, kind of like he did in Houston. So,
well,
but
I will say one thing though. I'm not banging the Morey drum. I'm not a Morey advocate or supporter, but. Morey, from his days in Houston, he did bring back, you know, he did bring in the chemistry killer. He brought in James Harden to try to be the big, you know, Batman, or, you know, Batman and Robin with Embiid. But
yeah.
We all know what Harden does to rosters.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. They haven't surrounded him with the right mix of talent.
Yeah.
And now, you know, just because you bring in a Harden or you bring in a Kyrie, you bring in a Simmons, you bring in these big names, that don't mean you're actually – building a good team.
Yeah, I can't stand hard.
Look at Boston. You know,
yeah.
And you were talking about Golden State earlier and how they're sliding, and they are. But go back to and look at how they built those glory teams through the draft. And they surrounded Curry with other weapons and role players, and it worked. You know,
right.
I mean, and you bring in Durant, I mean, you're not bringing in somebody that's going to kill chemistry. You're bringing in some guy that wants to win a ring.
Yeah.
Right.
You can't say that about the Sixers, I don't think. One final thing about this injury that I have found from another medical site is the question, how do you fix a torn meniscus flap? It says, in these situations, surgery is recommended. That's the first statement. And then it says it's done through several small incisions around the knee, which would be arthroscopic surgery.
There's no way around
it. I mean, if it's arthroscopic,
yeah,
arthroscopic,
there ain't no way around it. If they're gonna do the right thing for the person. And the investment, he needs to just be shut down and have surgery.
Yeah, he's out for the year.
Right.
Jim, I agree with you, man. I mean, you got to do the right thing. He's got to go under the knife.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise, they're just delaying the inevitable.
Yeah.
He's not going to be healthy. They got to do the right thing.
Yeah, because otherwise, you know, like I said, you don't want another, you don't want another situation like Robert Williams, where all of a sudden, in this case, Embiid is a much bigger star, but you know, you basically ruin essentially the rest of his career because
you ruined the rest of his career. You ruined the rest of his career, and you ruined the franchise.
Especially because you got to start all over. We're all big sports fans. We all want the best for both these guys, but, I mean, obviously Embiid's a different level to Time Lord. But, I mean, Robert Williams right now, his career's in jeopardy. So Philly's thinking, are we really going to lose this Embiid for the rest of our days here? Or they got to do the right thing and just pull the plug for this year and really get surgery.
Yeah.
There's no way they're going to add pieces right now because they're just floating in the water right now. They're dead duck. I mean, what are they going to sneak into the play-in and get smoked in the first round? Without Embiid, they're nothing. So, I mean,
in the East, it's going to be either Boston, Miami, or Milwaukee again anyway. So,
yeah. Jim, what do you think about the Pacers, man? They just added Pascal Siakam. I love Halliburton, obviously.
They're making – Yeah. They're making moves like they did back when Larry Bird was in charge.
I think they're kind of legit. They're definitely legit now to kind of make some noise and maybe push Boston.
I think they are, and it does mirror a lot of how Larry Bird used to operate the team when he was running the team. They were good back then. You know, of course, a lot of that was Reggie Miller, but they did have other quality players. And they had good role players, and that's kind of looks like what they're doing now.
I like their roster a lot. Boston's still the cream of the crop at East, so I would agree with you guys definitely.
Let me ask y'all something. Do y'all believe the rumor that the Lakers are honestly, quietly shopping LeBron?
It wouldn't surprise me if LeBron wants it. What else can they do? That's another team that's just broken. They're stuck.
LeBron wants LeBron got
pretty much. That's
they're 500.
The Magic twice.
They're 500, Jim, and every night it's a battle to see what's on the injury report. I mean, is Anthony Davis going to get injured getting out of the shower?
Yeah.
Can't rely on that guy at all. You can't rely on AD. He's a glass man. You can't rely on him. LeBron's fed up. LeBron's not getting any younger, obviously. I mean, that part is over in L.A. That show's over.
Yeah, Steve, Anthony Davis getting injured is kind of like Kevin Nash in WWE getting – he could tear a quad walking to the ring.
Yeah,
you know, when I saw them on the injury report against Boston – now, obviously the Lakers shredded Boston, but when I saw them on the injury report, the first thing I thought of was cowards. You don't want to play a rivalry game, so you decide, I'm going to pull a Kevin Nash, sit on the sideline, and then once we play a team that I feel like playing, I'm going to all of a sudden remove the curtain off of my supposedly injured leg while I'm sitting in the wheelchair like Kevin Nash, and I'm going to magically stand up and be healed.
Yeah, Steve, that's like, if like Kevin Nash is on the phone with Triple H and they're talking about the upcoming game between the Celtics and the Lakers, and Triple H says, well, you know, LeBron and AD are both out, and they're not going to play, and Kevin Nash would say, good move.
Who's
Kevin Nash?
Kevin Nash is a professional wrestler, a former professional wrestler. And speaking of Kevin Nash and the WWE, I obviously we discussed this last week, but Jim, I got to get your thoughts. What do you think about the whole Vince McMahon problem?
Oh my God. I honestly, and it looks like he's not going to do that now. And I wasn't you know, when I told you this, I wasn't saying this to be overly dramatic, but when all of that came out, if you remember what I told you, I said he should probably be on suicide watch.
Right.
Because,
yeah. Good.
I mean, a man in his position, his power.
Yeah.
To have all of this coming out now, and there's going to be more. There's going to be other women named. They're going to come out and talk.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, it's so bad. Your own daughter and son-in-law won't let you around their children. Your grandchildren, they won't let you around them.
Both
I mean, I was honest, Steve. I honest to God could have foreseen him committing suicide.
Yeah,
yeah, and you know another thing too to add on to it as well, you have John Laurinaitis flipping on him this week, and also you there was a report that came out that said that the non-disclosure agreements that he had signed women to were apparently behind the company's back, so they may not be enforceable anymore.
Oh, wow.
Which means those women could speak out.
There's going to be a lot of birds chirping now. It's just like Jim said, it's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, people, they've opened up a Pandora's box. There's going to be a lot more stories, I think. There's going to be some more stories.
Yeah.
There's going to be some people talking coming up real soon.
Yeah, Steve, you remember how this happened at Fox News back when Roger Ailes was running things at Fox News. And how Gretchen Carlson came out with the story about him. Everybody thought, oh, well, that's so horrible, horrible. And we were like, oh, I bet there's more to this. And here they come. Here come all the other women. And I think that's what Vince is fixing to face, too. And he's probably doing the best thing right now by just staying low and not commenting. Laurinaitis is trying to save his ass. You know, he's as big a horn dog as Vince is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, Laurinaitis,
the only difference in Vince and Laurinaitis is when Vince is with him in the room, it's a strong voice like, lay down, woman. If it's Laurinaitis, it's, I told you to lay down.
Yeah, with the gravelly
voice.
Yeah.
He is a former professional wrestler who never made it big. So he decided to be a stooge to Vince McMahon for so many years.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
And if anything, it was his brother, Road Warrior Animal, who got bigger.
It's not like they haven't released him before because of stuff like this. And then Vince brought him back. So this ain't the first. He's just trying to save his marriage to the Bella's mama.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think this is going to be the end for both of them?
Huh?
Do you think this is going to be the end for both of them?
I'll bet you
Daniel Bryan and Bree won't let him around their kids now.
No, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised at all, considering. Considering there's probably going to be a lot more.
Yeah, and he's not even their father. He's a stepfather.
Right. And from what it sounds like too, you know, you got Brock Lesnar thrown in the mix as well. Brock's probably going to get blacklisted like Benoit did.
Yeah, they're erasing him now. I mean, you're not going to see him in WWE no more.
I don't think so.
What do you expect? I don't get it. I know everybody's got their own little thing that they get into and stuff. Maybe I'm just a dumb old country boy from Arkansas, but when he's wanting a woman to send him a video of her pissing. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Well, you know, they got some strange fetishes, we'll put it that way. And, you know, for a former WWE and UFC champion like Brock Lesnar, somebody who makes the WWE money, for him to be implicated in something like this, I mean, this is – they're already talking about erasing Vince from WWE records, which – from WWE history, I should say, which is going to be a very hard thing to do considering, you know, how much he had been involved over the past three decades or more, you know, with the company. But now, you know, you erase somebody who probably was going to be a Hall of Fame inductee at one point. And also, you got to feel bad for his wife, Sable, too.
Yeah.
You know, for you to have a smoking hot wife like Sable and still request stuff like this on the down low.
Well, for all we know, before it's over with, it may turn out that Brock let Vince have Sable one night. We don't know.
Right.
We don't know.
Well, I mean,
but I think it'd be very hard. I think it'd be very hard to erase Vince from WWE history. It'd be hard to erase Brock, but especially Vince. I don't know how you can do that. I think you might just get rid of him now, and you never use him again. Never call his name. He never comes up. He never does anything on behalf of the company anymore. And the same with Brock, but I don't know how you can just erase everything he had to do with the company. If you look in the NFL, I mean, certain players have had a lot of issues. Michael Irvin's had a lot of issues. You don't see the Cowboys erasing him in Major League Baseball. Keith Hernandez had issues. You didn't see the Cardinals or Mets erasing him.
Did the Giants
erase Bonds? Even the Reds didn't erase Pete Rose.
Yeah, Pete Rose is back.
You know,
in the ballpark. Pete Rose is out in Cincinnati last summer.
No, you're 100% right.
Yeah.
The difference.
Well, I don't know how you erase Vince McMahon. I don't know how you do that.
And the difference, though, it's even to speak to your point, Jim, I mean, it's even bigger and better. The magnitude, his presence is everywhere. He's omnipresent, right? I mean, he was the leader of wrestling for a while, right? It was his show.
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't a performer. He was the guy at the top.
Well,
so, I mean, he was the owner
and the guy making all the decisions. But he did end up from time to time being a performer, too. And he was good at that.
Right.
He was really good at that.
But, I mean, his presence in there is much bigger than even a Pete Rose or, you know, any O.J. Simpson in Buffalo. You could name a bunch of guys that have been kind of blackballed.
Right.
Tarred and feathered, but that are still around. You can't force someone to just be erased. But,
yeah. I mean, Steve, how are you going to keep Vince McMahon out of the WWE Hall of Fame when he created it?
Well, because it would be bad for press. It would be bad for, you know, if they were to honor him in the Hall of Fame, you know, you would have so much heat being put on the company by his accusers.
Of course.
By basically saying, you're celebrating a rapist, basically.
Well, yeah, those are good points, but I don't know how you... I don't know how you keep him out of. I don't see how you erase him. Maybe he don't go in the Hall of Fame, but I don't see how you erase him because I know they had all this problem with Benoit, you know, after he killed his wife
son. That's right.
And they erased him, and fans don't forget though. I mean.
Right.
You know, fans see what it is. They know what the guy did. They don't like it. They don't like what he did, but they appreciate what he did when he, when he was a performer and how he performed for the fans in the ring, but they can kind of separate it as, yeah, but he was a murderer, so we get it.
Yeah.
But you're not going to erase from my head that night that I took the last $40 I had and I took my kid to see him, and we were sitting on the third row, and he came by and he tapped my kid on the shoulder.
You got an autograph. Yeah, like,
you know,
yeah.
You can't erase the memories you have in your head.
Yeah,
Diane.
It'd just be hard to do. You know, it'd be hard to do.
Right, and plus, you know, another thing too is you take a look at the video footage. You know, every time that they would mention Chris Benoit, all of that was edited out. So, I mean, you would still see him on the screen, but you just wouldn't hear his name. Like, they would edit out every single time he was even mentioned. You know, if you were to do that for Vince McMahon, you could basically write out, you would basically have to erase the entire 1990s off of it, because he was a commentator, he was an on-screen performer, you know.
It's impossible.
It's impossible, exactly. So
he's part of the fabric. He's like the main part of the fabric, right? He's like the he's almost like the backbone of the whole machine. He's like the main.
Yeah. I mean, they've always said in the WWE, the biggest influences they ever had on business for WWE were Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Undertaker, and Stone Cold Steve Austin. I don't know how you can't put Vince McMahon in that group, and he might be a bigger influence than any of them.
Well, just take a look at the.
He was the one. He was the one that made them stars.
Yeah, and you know, another thing too is you take a look at every time they go through a TV deal. You know, like when Raw's TV deal or SmackDown's TV deal comes up for a renewal.
Yeah.
Every single network wanted to talk with Vince. They don't want to talk with Nick Khan. They don't want to talk with John Laurinaitis. They want to do business with Vince. Well, or they used to want to do business with Vince. Now, obviously, it would be Triple H or Ari Emanuel or maybe Nick Khan. But, you know, Vince was basically, he wasn't just the owner. He wasn't just the character on screen. He was the figurehead of the company. Everything ran through him. So,
another thing, Steve, and I mean, I know it's different when it's confirmed and you have quality reports with accurate information and you know it's true, but let's face it, did we not all know Vince McMahon was this type of a scumbag the whole time?
Right.
Maybe he was, you just didn't see it.
Yeah, this was the confirmation of the rumors, like the feeling I already had. This kind of dip, obviously this product, but I already had a feeling.
Right. I mean, we all already were smart enough to know. Some of this stuff has come out before. You've heard other people come out with it before. You've heard certain talent leave and drop little hints here and there. I mean, it's shocking at how bad it was and how gross he was and what was going on, but it wasn't surprising. It didn't surprise me. I was like, oh, okay, they've got their proof now. I mean, it didn't surprise me at all.
With a guy who had a questionable kind of like the reputation, I could only imagine, you know, you put two and two together, I could imagine that it's all happening. So now that it happened, I'm like, I ain't a damn bit surprised.
Yeah.
But, Jim, you know, it almost makes you think, you know, you go back to one of those feuds that he was in with his daughter, Stephanie, when Stephanie would mention something about what she used to have to do in his business meetings for his business partners. you know, you almost wonder, was any of that stuff true now that this, you know, or what, you know, was it specifically for the feud, or was there any truth to any of that stuff that she had said? Because, I mean, why else would she leave the company when, as soon as her father came right back?
Right.
I think it's really unfortunate. I think that, that suggests that she they're going through a lot of stuff behind the scenes. And once the cat got out of the bag, you know, whatever you want to say about that analogy, once shit hit the fan,
well, the thing,
she was out.
The
she's
thing
gone
is,
through a lot. She's the monster's daughter the whole year, all those years.
The thing with Steph and the thing with Shane and the thing with Triple H and the thing with Linda is they know even more than what's come out so far.
Yeah. That's the scary thing.
Yeah.
Is that they know
I'm just telling you, I'm telling you, when a,
come out, so.
When a daughter will not let the grandfather, who is her father, around her own children, there's a big problem somewhere.
There's a problem now.
Yeah, it really makes you wonder. It really makes you wonder just exactly how far does this span.
And it does, like you brought up that storyline, it does make you think back to other previous storylines, like you saw what he publicly made some of these women do. Everyone saw how uncomfortable they were with the things he made Trish Stratus do in front of the crowds. Can you imagine maybe what was going on behind the scenes?
Right. I mean, one of them, like, it doesn't sound like much, but when he had her bark like a walk around and bark like a dog in the ring, that it just seems so, you know, so completely random to begin with.
Yes.
You know, among other things. And then he also mentioned, I remember with Shane McMahon, when he had that feud with Shane, when Shane came back, that he mentioned something about a black box or something. I mean, I know it sounds completely random, but it's like, what the fuck is going on in this guy, in this family's history to bring up shit like this for a feud?
I'm afraid to find out.
You know, I mean, it just seems so random.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously, at this point, there's basically he's basically gone from the company. You know, I don't see how he can be proven innocent when there's just so much stuff being piled on. I would find it very hard to believe that he could be found innocent of any of these charges.
Steve, you're a smart guy. Everyone on the call is pretty tough. There's not a cold day in hell. There's no way he's innocent of this. I mean, it's getting worse and worse every day. There's so much smoke. There's so much fire. He's cooked.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame, honestly. The reason why I say it's a shame is because, you know, for a guy who took over this company from his father and basically took it to so many different heights that it's been over the last however many decades. You know, it's hard to fathom, essentially. But so not only did we have new updates when it came to Vince, and I'm sure there's probably going to be a lot more that's gonna come out about this. But I want to get your thoughts, Jim, on yet another thing involving the tricep tear by CM Punk, which has now caused the WWE to completely change their plan for WrestleMania.
Well, it's unfortunate, and I've never been a Punk fan. I understand he has a huge following, huge fan base, and he's good for business. It's unfortunate because I've kind of seen him in a different light since he's been back this time. I think he's tried harder to get along with people. He's not the guy he used to be backstage causing trouble. He seems like now he tries to get along with everybody. And it's just unfortunate. I mean, I know it changed up their Mania plans, but it's like they say, the show must go on.
Right. And actually, I should add as well that Brock Lesnar being involved the lawsuit has also changed things up as well, because he was supposed to face Gunther at WrestleMania, and now obviously that's not going to happen, and you know Brock isn't going to be anywhere near WWE programming for probably maybe ever as a result of this. So, you know, Brock even being involved has completely changed that too.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, I don't think we're going to see Brock in WWE anymore.
Yeah, I doubt it. I highly doubt it at this point.
If I rob a bank and two people are in the back seat and they got guns, and even if they don't go in with the bank, you know, they're going down too. There's a lot of tentacles and a lot of people are going down along with McMahon. That's just the basic way that it works.
Right, exactly. And you know, I was gonna bring up that point as well. The fact that
I would never rob a bank, rest assured. But they're culpable. They're part of the plan. They were doing dirt the whole time too. I mean, that's why they've gotten mighty quiet. They're just not. Yeah, they're guilty in their own way. Let them all.
Yeah, and there could be others.
The truth will start getting revealed.
There could be other people involved.
More and more is going to start coming out. More and more is coming out.
Oh, yeah, there could be others, because in particular they said that it was current and former WWE superstars were involved.
Yeah.
So
one of the
it
worst
makes
thing,
you wonder
one of the, one,
how many.
Yeah, one of the worst things that came out was Vince was relaying this to that lady in a manner of, well, I'm trying to re-sign this guy to a contract, and if you do this for him and with him, it'll help me get him re-signed.
Yep.
That's trafficking.
That's
prostitution.
Oh, yeah. Ernie, that's right. 100%. That's 100% a lot more than just Vince being a skews bag. That's involving a lot of other moving parts now. There's a lot of people that are facing some music coming up. That's trafficking.
Yeah.
And that's federal, across state lines, anything that breaks the law, that's federal. That's hard time.
Yeah, because one of the times it was supposed to happen, he wasn't able to make it there because of a snowstorm. You know, he lives up, was it Alaska or somewhere, Canada? I don't know. Somewhere in the United States where the weather's always horrible, and he couldn't make it there. So the girl has to send him a video of her taking a piss.
If he can't make it there, he can't make it anywhere.
Blue with the 1-2 there. Oh yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, that's kind of traffic.
So
right there.
So did that happen? Did that happen with any other wrestlers? Was that part of any other wrestlers signing a contract?
Yeah, it really makes you wonder, you know, because there's been God knows how many guys and girls that he's had to sign over the years. You know, it really makes you wonder just exactly how many people are implicated in this. And from what certain people in the know have said, and I'm not talking like dirt sheets, I'm talking like actual, you know, former people like Eric Bischoff, you know, people who are, you know, Jim Cornette and whatnot. Apparently there's a lot more that is yet to come out when it comes to all of this, stuff.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling, that this is just only the tip of the iceberg, so to speak, before we actually drill down even deeper into that iceberg.
You know, the whole thing's kind of crazy. Because the guy's loaded with money, and he made her sign a contract, an NDA, where she wouldn't reveal anything in exchange for X amount of money, which was $3 million. He was going to give her three different payments of $1 million each. He gave her the first payment for $1 million, and then he said to hell with her, cut her off. I'm not going to pay her no more. Well,
wow.
that violated the agreement.
That violated the
agreement, which made it okay for her to come forward and talk. And now sue him. All he had to do was just pay her like he said, and it would have went away.
Right.
Which I know that sounds ugly to say that, but looking at it from a business point, just pay her what you said you're going to pay her, and you won't have no problem. Then she's got to honor the agreement.
Covered his ass.
Yeah.
Right. And for what it sounds like, he
left the back door open right there to get railroaded like he is right now, because he didn't even just honor
the shady-ass agreement. Watch your words now. You talking about back doors being open and people getting railroaded.
Let me amend that. He left the front door wide open, the screen porch door. That's bad. No, he left himself susceptible to a lawsuit. There you go.
From what it sounds like, though, even though he signed all those non-disclosure agreements, and maybe he ended up paying those people in full. From the report that came out this week, the fact that, yeah, those non-disclosure agreements may not be, may not be legal because of the fact that they were done without the company's, without the company knowing about it, they may still come out and reveal this information regardless. So, you know, he's just, I mean, my God, he was a dumbass to keep it away from the company to begin with.
He's beyond screwed. But he's completely, there's no way out of it. That's why I hadn't even thought about it. I love what Grip said. Suicide watch. I mean, the guy's disgraced, and legally, morally, history-wise, you know, his legacy, his tradition, everything's shot. I mean, the guy's got to be ready to go off the deep end.
I know why.
But anyways, we go from him. Obviously, there's going to be more information that's going to come out, I'm sure, involving him. But over to baseball, where we have, in my opinion, at least I'm very happy about this, even though it may just seem like window dressing. The Boston Red Sox have officially added, or I should say Fenway Sports Group has officially added Theo Epstein, the former longtime general manager of the Boston Red Sox, as a part owner and senior advisor. And in particular, according to one of the sports guys, I think it was Sean McAdam, who said that Theo Epstein was added due to, in large part, the fact that Henry and company feel like they have been ignoring the Red Sox in general.
Oh, really?
And
oh, really?
That Theo, that Theo will be the one in charge.
Well, and I love Theo. I love Theo, and the more power they give him, the better.
Yeah.
Because he's the only
now,
guy that actually really gives a shit about baseball.
Can he make John Henry spend money? I don't know.
Well, yeah, that is a big question. If you know, if he can actually get them to spend money, but you know, from what I read from Sean McAdam, there's only three people that Henry that really influenced Henry throughout his time as a baseball owner. There was Dave Dombrowski. There was Larry Lucchino, who is no longer, of course, with the ownership group and hasn't been for quite some time. And the third one was Theo Epstein. So, not saying it's going to happen, but maybe perhaps they brought him on board with the thought being, okay, you'll handle the Red Sox. We'll handle everything else. We'll handle all these other things that we're dealing with, like PGA golf all of a sudden now.
Amazing. Jim, you heard of Stock in the past several weeks. I'm sure you've listened in a little bit. I mean, Steve is like, he was very, very passionate, very knowledgeable about all things Red Sox, and I've taken an affinity to it. Like I'm invested now because of being on the show, which I love so much, calling in and stuff, and it's amazing. Now I'm following it, and now I see, like, this is – Henry's absolutely just robbing the fans of a good team. It's disgraceful.
Yeah, I mean, and he knows he's doing it. He knows he's doing it. The majority of the fans know he's doing it, but they're so loyal to the team, they still go and pay the ticket prices and souvenirs and memorabilia and support the team. And it's almost at a point where he's abusing the fans because
he really knows
what he's doing to them and he don't care.
I've gotten really, really pissed off about it. It's because such a great fan base and such a great tradition. It's a disservice to the fans. Who is it about at the end of the day? It's supposed to be about the fans. And, yeah, like you said before, the person, you know, saving up to go to a game, the same thing in baseball. The dad or the mom or, you know, bringing kids with the parking now, it's, you know, a couple $100.
Yeah,
he doesn't care. He doesn't care. He doesn't care about them.
He doesn't.
No.
He doesn't care. It's very simple. Every season, the spending goes down.
Yeah.
The revenue goes up. The profits go up.
That's it. And he lets other people
and
take the fall.
And you finish in last place again.
Yeah. No, he's been a total dirtbag. You and Steve have nailed it. And I'm curious, maybe they just brought in Theo, like, you know, to put lipstick on a pig. Oh, yeah, look, we brought Theo back. I mean, what's the role, though? Come on. It's not going to mean they're going to spend. I don't think they are.
That's right.
It's kind of like a facelift. I don't know
about that, though, because Theo, I kind of feel like Theo is such a big baseball fan that he wouldn't leave his job with Major League Baseball because he was a consultant for On-Field Matters the last 2 years for Major League Baseball. I don't think he would leave a job like that if it were to just be, you know, a yes man for John Henry.
Right.
I don't know.
I mean, I hope I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, the thing is, could he be convinced we're going to give you this and this and this, and we're going to let you have this power, this power, this power, and then Theo's like, okay, I believe you. And then they walk out of the office, and John Henry goes, what a dumbass.
Yeah. What a dumbass.
You can't actually make moves. We're not going to spend money. No, I've never seen a hire like this. They're bringing back a name to give fans hope. He's not going to have any ability to spend. So I just think it's a bullshit hire. It's a putting lipstick on a pig. It's a shit pig situation. John Henry's the pig.
But I mean, I think if you're John Henry, you know, obviously at some point you kind of have to get the feeling of, okay, I'm going to start losing. You know, I'm going to start losing fan support. And of course I say this, but then again, you know, this is the same fucking ownership group who tried to sell fans at Winter Weekend on, oh, go there for the Fenway experience. So basically you're selling Red Sox games. This is how bad it is that Red Sox tickets are being sold at Costco.
It's like a theme park, Great Adventure.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, come experience Disney World.
We used to experience
the Fenway experience.
We're gonna gouge the prices, but we still don't spend money on how good our team is. But you're still gonna pay through the nose.
Right.
Even though we said
it's a total slap in the face to all the fans.
But I mean, you would at least have to think that if you're John Henry, you look at what the Orioles just did, getting Corbin Burnes from the Brewers for practically nothing, and you know you see everybody else is improving, and meanwhile you're like, oh, well, we got Lucas Giolito.
Big one.
You know,
that's a good 2 or 3 years.
At some point, you have to be like, well, okay, maybe I actually do have to do something, because otherwise I could actually potentially lose actual, you know, support.
He's trying to stay
paid. By the way,
I think it's just a, you know, it's a image hire. It's not a real hire where anyone's going to – it's just glossing over the fact that he doesn't want to spend money. I mean, what
right. –
so Theo was the orchestrator,
oh.
You know, the captain of the ship when it came to spending money and making good deals, and now he's brought back in some weird different role I've hardly ever heard of. It just doesn't smell right to me. He's not going to come back and spend money.
I mean, you look at what other teams in the AL East are doing. You have a guy in Justin Turner who wanted to re-sign with Boston. He goes and signs with Toronto, and the reason he gave was, well, Boston, I wanted to stay in Boston, but negotiations never got off the ground level. I mean, that's literally how sad of an organization this is right now. Where, I mean, normally you've been struggling the last couple of years to get players to come to Boston. Here you have a guy that wants to stay in Boston, and you're like, for $13 million? No, we're good. You can go elsewhere. And yet, this team does not want to say, oh, well, we're rebuilding. They still put out that same bullshit that says, oh, we're going full throttle. We're going to, mm-hmm. you know, pedal to the metal. We're going to be aggressive. and the only fucking move you make is Lucas Giolito.
I'm sorry, that guy's been so inconsistent. I mean, you cannot bank on that guy to be an ace or a number two. He's been so erratic. I mean, come on. That's not a huge signing to me.
Yeah, don't be a dickhead.
I mean,
it's not.
I mean, stop spitting in the faces of your fans and just say that we are entering a rebuild.
Yeah.
Stop spitting in the face of your fans. We're not stupid.
Well, that's easy to say,
but are we stupid or not? If we still go and pay Henry the money he keeps jacking up every year, are we stupid or not?
I know you guys aren't. Most of the fan base might be.
Yeah.
A lot of people still pay that money. They want that Devers jersey. They want that, you know, they want that autograph. They're going to drive 4 hours from Maine and still pay through the nose for this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They'll just blink. They won't even blink. They'll just keep. People are still going to buy tickets and concessions.
How many times do you have to finish in last place and then in the off season not do anything to improve your team, and fans
right.
will still keep going and spending the money that you keep jacking up every year, raising prices? When does it stop?
Oh, but Jim, it's the
when do fans say
Jim,
that's
the
enough?
Fenway, it's the Fenway experience, Jim.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it. The mystique of the stadium is going to keep that money coming in.
Yeah, it's the Fenway experience. Fans don't
well,
give
somebody,
a fuck about the team. They just want to go and see an old, decrepit stadium.
Somebody fly over and drop a little small bomb on the Green Monster and let's end its shit.
Oh, I love
to see that. Case closed.
I love the players, but it's hard to support the team because of ownership.
I can only imagine, man.
Well,
I feel you guys, man.
Leave it up.
And again, major market. I've never really seen this. You could look at basketball, football. I've never seen it on any sports, pro sports landscape like this. He's literally hijacking the team. They have tons of money, and he's just not spending. I have not seen this. You know, you can talk about Oakland or Milwaukee or any of these other teams, but to do this in Boston, you know, one of the heart of America, right there on the Northeast, man, it's like that's a baseball cash cow. Yankees, obviously, you know.
Mm.
Fenway Park is such a destination. Maybe he just doesn't want to spend. It's a really it's pathetic.
Instead, he wants to spend money on golf, and he's deciding, nah, we're going to spend also going to spend money, and we're going to build apartment buildings around Fenway so that people will pay to live I guess they're going to call it Fenway Commons or something.
Giolito's family. Yeah.
So it's fucking pathetic at this point.
So ridiculous. He's ski mask. He's robbing the fans.
But I look at this trade that Baltimore made to get Corbin Burns. And it's like, you mean to tell me that with the prospect pool that you have, I mean, granted, Baltimore has a pretty deep pool too, but with
they
the prospect pool that you have. Baltimore gave up nothing. You mean to tell me that you couldn't beat that?
They give Joey Ortiz like a utility man, like top 20 for them prospect. Maybe better otherwise, but like a 260 hitter, small guy, nice glove. Like, and then D.L. Hall, a reliever for Corbin Burns, a certified ace. Yeah, Baltimore's going all in. But yeah, I mean, that's the Milwaukee small market where it's like that's the way John Henry's treating his Red Sox, where they should be making moves like Baltimore.
All right, it's just really pathetic at this point. I mean, I'm not a fair weather fan, you know, I've been born and raised Boston, but
right.
I mean, at this point, it's like, why should I bother watching this? Watching a single fucking game this season when you can't even admit that we're in a rebuild, and you're still trying to sell people on saying that, you know, oh, we're gonna, you know, we want the World Series this year. You know, we want to get back to contention. And yet you've only made one major signing.
If you have any doubt that all this is just money motivated by Henry trying to save money and not spend on the team, listen to this. Last season, Hein Bloom, the GM, turned down a trade where he could have got rid of Chris Sale in that $30 million a year contract he's got. He turned it down. He got fired. What's the first thing that Breslow does as the new GM? He gets rid of Chris Sale.
Grissom. Yeah. That's the difference. Yeah, Bloom.
And might I add, that was one hell of a get, though.
Jim, you nailed it. Bloom actually acted like a savvy GM and tried to get ill, and he got fired for it.
Might I add, though, that was one hell of a get for them to be able to get Grissom Sale, who hasn't been able to stay off of the injury list.
We think it was. We don't know yet. We think it was.
Right.
Chris Sale will probably go to Braves and win 22 games this year.
Oh, of course. Mm-hmm. Of course. That's where pitchers turn to gold over there. It's like Tampa. Oh, yeah. He's going to be like 23-5. He's never going to get injured. He's going to throw, you know, 290 innings for the next 8 years.
And the whole thing with who we got, Steve, with Grissom, he turns out to be really, really good, as soon as the contract comes up, he's gone. I mean, that's what we are now. We're Tampa Bay. When somebody's contract comes due, they're gone. We're not going to pay you. The only reason they paid they had to sign somebody, one person, because they done got rid of everybody else. We got to sign at least one guy where they'll still come and pay for the tickets, and we can still move our lie along about how we're still spending and we're still trying. You paid one guy. That's all you've done. You got rid of everybody else.
Well, you know, I look at it like this, that now granted this is a very low bar here, but even if Grissom turns out to be a serviceable everyday player at second base, that's still better than anybody else we could have put at second.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, we had fucking Pablo Reyes last year who couldn't hit for shit when it comes to power. But he can hit 300. He can hit 300 for contact, but yet when it comes to power, he had, like, I think two home runs.
How old is Justin Turner? 35, 36, third baseman. We put him at second.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
The Braves have shown themselves.
Steve, I told you 2 years ago what was going on, and I said Bloom is going to be the next scapegoat. He'll get fired. He's the next scapegoat.
Yep.
Then they'll give the new GM a couple of years, so the scapegoat after Bloom,
Cora,
the next season, which is where we're at right now, Cora's going to be the scapegoat. They're going to fire the manager. They'll hire a new manager to try to excite everybody. And then the next year, the year after this, next year, Breslow will get fired. Then the next year, the new manager will get fired. And then after that, the new GM that they brought in to replace Brett. It's just a cycle.
No,
Henry don't give a shit. There's going to be scapegoats.
Yeah.
He's going to always say, well, we're trying to win. We're trying to win.
Yeah, Henry's on a yacht somewhere hanging out. Oh, I feel so terrible about this.
Yeah.
Really hurt.
Thank
really
you for everything you did, Alex. Thank you for winning a championship for us when I was willing to spend a little money. But, you know, it's a little different now because our fans have a champagne taste, and I got a beer wallet.
Exactly.
You know, I
followed the Red Sox a lot more now with, you know, with you and Steve calling in and hanging out and being part of the fam a lot, and it's ridiculous. And you know what? They have Rafael. They have a lot of young players coming up that are going to be good. Let's see if they retain them in 4 or 5 years.
Nope, they won't. They won't.
Ask Mookie. They have a nice farm system now.
Ask Mookie. Ask Benintendi.
Oh, God. Writing was on the wall.
Ask JD. Yeah, I mean.
They don't want that.
One of the next ones to go will be Tristan Costas. Probably he'll be one of the next ones to go.
Wow! Right.
And then wherever they get rid of Costas for a dozen baseballs and a water cooler, he'll probably go and have 30 homers and 100 RBIs and bat 315
for Baltimore.
Yeah, Bello will probably be gone too.
Wow.
Yeah, because he wants an extension. He did the ultimate no-no. I'm sure some of the players went to him and said, do you realize what you did? You went public and said you want to sign an extension.
Yeah.
Dude, you're going to be gone. You don't say that around here.
Yeah, It's very disappointing with what with how they're handling this once proud organization, to where now they're basically being looked at as a laughingstock at this point. And you know, it used to be the top two teams in Boston were the Patriots and the Red Sox. And now all of a sudden,
they're
the bottom two teams.
Yeah.
And, you know, another thing, too, the Orioles getting their new ace in Corbin Burnes, this comes on the heels of them selling the franchise to a group led by billionaire David Rubenstein.
I'll tell you how bad it is
with the Red Sox. I'll tell you how bad it is. I got a really good friend, Steve, you know him, that's a diehard Yankee fan. David Cadmus, longtime friend,
mm-hmm.
and we've always had these very nice rivalries over the years, Red Sox and Yankees, and it was always so much fun, you know, because both teams were so competitive and the games were good. And, you know, in one year you'd have the bragging rights, the next year they'd have the bragging rights. He told me, he said, Jim, I don't know what y'all are doing, but I miss the days when it was so much fun that both our teams were so competitive. I said, I miss it too, David, but that's not us anymore. That's from
right,
a Yankees
you know,
fan. That's from a Yankees fan, Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's exactly the same thing that I said a couple weeks ago on the show, that, you know, you have Yankee fans that are actually hoping that the Red Sox turn things around because they actually miss the rivalry. When normally Yankee fans should be dunking on Red Sox fans any chance they get.
Yeah. That's true, too.
So it's, it's just really mind-boggling the route that John Henry has decided to take with this Red Sox team. And I mean, hell, even you know the Tampa Bay Rays, they're a small market team, but they're even you know making moves. You know, granted they're not big moves, but they're still better moves than anything that Boston has made. They picked up they just picked up Phil Maton today.
That's still the best.
Formerly
the best developmental team. That I mean, if you want to run and win a World Series, if you're anywhere in the MLB, hire someone out of that developmental. I mean, talk about scouting. They make something out of nothing every year. They churn and burn. They go through from Kiermaier to Evan Longoria to Carl Crawford to B.J. Upton. Now they just traded Glass now. You know what I mean?
Look at all the pitchers they've had.
They will not spend money and they will not stop losing. They always win every year. They bring up
difference with them, Alex, and with Boston. They do it in a manner. They do develop great young talent, even all the way back to like B.J. Upton and all. I mean, all these guys.
Yeah.
They develop great young talent. But here's the key to it: they bring them up at a young age and they let them play. Boston,
they don't play yo-yo.
Holds on to theirs and keeps them at AAA. Oh, they're going to be good. They're coming up next year. They don't ever bring them up and let them play.
They don't play mind games. Yeah, I've noticed that. The Red Sox, they bring guys up. They put them on a yo-yo. Or even we were talking a couple Saturdays ago. Steve brought it up. You know, Taylor Hawk and Cutter Crawford. Endless. A lot of different pitchers. You're a reliever. Next month, you're a starter. The guys are going, what the hell am I? The Red Sox don't even build anyone's confidence. They don't know what, like, even how to develop now. They have a good farm.
See, if they would just say, we cut payroll, but we think we got a lot of great young talent, and we're going to bring them up. It's time to let them play, hang in there with us. We may not win it this year, but by God, we're going to be competitive, and we may win it next year. Fans would get behind that. They would get behind that.
Yeah.
They would get behind the new young players, but you
got
to let them play.
That's all they
got to
do. That's all they got to do is stop insulting us with all this shit that we're going to be competitive, and you don't do shit. Stop insulting us. That's all they got to do.
They make stupid decisions every year at the trade deadline. They have guys that the contracts do, if you're John Henry, you know, if you're the GM, you are not re-signing this guy when the season's over, and they still so damn hard-headed wanting to trick the fans that were going for it that they don't trade them and get anything.
We're all in, but they're
right.
And they don't get anything of value when they
deadline
pass.
Yeah, they're not all in. They're not going
to
keep them. They just want you to keep filling up the stadium.
Look at Justin Turner. They could have gotten a prospect or two out of him.
Yeah, it's just.
I mean, we know as fans, we know they're not going to keep these people. So we've kind of reserved ourselves down to the fact that trade deadline, okay, well, all right, we know we're not going to keep J.D. Martinez. What could we get for him? Who do you think? And then it's like, well, we can forget thinking about this because them dumbasses won't trade him. They're going to come back and say, we're going for it. We think we got a good team. We're going for it. And when they do, what do we get for Mookie Betts? What do we get?
Terrible. Verdugo and trash. I think Verdugo is kind of trashy, whatever.
Yeah, and where is Verdugo now?
Well,
we didn't get nothing. We didn't get
nothing.
We got
he a Yankee now.
got a guy for Benintendi who ain't played because he stays hurt all the time.
Hit about 20 home runs in 7 years.
And I guess they just forget the catch that Benny made out in left field that completely saved the series for him. It's like they don't appreciate anything. They don't, I mean, you know, just we want, you know, we're gonna sell tickets. We're going to sell memorabilia. We're going to sell concessions. Like Steve said, we're going to sell the Fenway Park experience. We don't care about y'all.
No, we don't.
Much.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's so
evil and hard-headed, he won't just sell the team. If you don't want nothing to do around them, get rid of them. But the thing is, he's still making buttloads of money because the fans still keep going and play.
I mean, that's
tour. He lowers his cost.
Fenway's
he
be
lowers
cash
his
out.
Costs and raises income, and bottom line, I mean, the only way it's going to stop is if the fans just stop paying it.
Exactly.
Right.
You could only imagine, though. Let's look at like the Bronx in Yankee Stadium. It's never going to be half full. If they suddenly turn off the bank accounts there and the close their wallets and said, we're not trading for Juan Soto, we're not re-signing Garrett Cole, if they started pulling this bullshit that Boston's been doing for half a decade, I don't know, Yankee Stadium's still going to get filled up. They could do the same thing. They could
well,
still
the thing with the Yankees is they make so much money off the TV contract they got.
Yeah.
They
could do the same thing. They could do the same thing right now and still make money.
They could.
Oh,
yeah.
Jim, I forgot to add, too, John Henry also owns the Red Sox television station, Nesson, and he also owns the Boston Globe.
I didn't know he owns the Globe.
I forgot to mention that, too. So he was responsible for Don Orsillo being fired as the Red Sox lead commentator, who was absolutely beloved in Boston, but Henry had a stick up his ass and fired him, and now he's producing award-winning commentary for the San Diego Padres. You know, with Henry, this level of tyranny that he has had, you know, has been going on for years, and it's only just these last couple of years that all of a sudden he's decided, okay, I'm going to take it to the next level. I'm not going to spend. All because Dombrowski decided, well, I want a World Series, so I want to spend.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's what Dombrowski did. Dombrowski took a different approach with Henry than the other GMs have. Dombrowski took the approach as, I'm going to do it and apologize later, instead of asking for permission. So Dombrowski would go out and sign these players to these contracts and make these trades and bring in bigger players and give them money and win some championships, and then John Henry said, no, screw this shit, you're fired.
You're fired.
I mean, the thing that gets
but
me,
I
Jim,
won you titles. I don't give a damn. You're fired. You're spending too much money.
Why, you jerk?
Yeah, the thing that gets me, Jim, is how the hell could an owner not want the extra profit from being in the playoffs? And not just that, you know damn well if they win a World Series, you get a sizable, huge increase from the league as a bonus.
I don't know. Maybe he. I mean, we don't. We don't know. It would make for an interesting documentary on Netflix. We don't know. Maybe Henry is just that small-sighted. Maybe he doesn't look at the big picture. Maybe he doesn't look at that potential. All he looks at is what's going out the door now, what he's spending right now, and what he gets back this year.
Right.
Maybe he doesn't look at the big picture like that, how he could capitalize off of something like that.
If he goes all in and gets a Corbin Burns, Steve, that'll cost him $100 million the next 3 years.
Yeah.
But he he's not adding up the money going, oh, but I'm going to make $200 more because of that. He's saying, no, I don't want to even spend that $100 million. I'm going to sit as it is.
Exactly.
Check the ticket stands and the contract, and let's just keep the money coming in. It's cash cow. Well, let's keep it going out of it.
Well, right now they have $40 million less than what they had last year.
But they're competing, Steve.
LeBron, the Lakers, winning in the Garden.
$40 million less than what they had last year. And yet they want to try and sell us on competing. If you're competing, you would sign Jordan Montgomery right now. If you were competing, you would sign Blake Snell right now.
They're not. They're giving lip service. You got no. But the more naive, I don't judge anyone, but like the people who don't know as much as you guys, They're falling for it. They're getting conned. Yeah. The people showing up, spending $400 to drive 3 hours to go see with their two daughters on a weekend, they're the ones getting conned because the Red Sox are not putting together products that the fans deserve.
I mean, hell, let's segue over from a team that doesn't give a fuck about their fans or about putting a respectable product out on the field to two teams that actually care about putting a respectable product on the field and also care about their fans, the Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers.
Yes.
You know, you have Kansas City. Now, granted, let's keep in mind, football is a much different sport than baseball when it comes to ownership and how much money can be spent. But here you have Kansas City who put out, what was it, $500 million to Patrick Mahomes?
And look at
where it's gotten them. They're perennial Super Bowl contenders, no matter how bad the offense is. They're perennial Super Bowl contenders because they have the magic man. Then you have San Francisco, who dishes out a whole bunch of money to so many skill-level players. You know, they're basically perennial contenders each year. And you know what? They continue making money because you have those extra games that you're playing. Something that Henry can't get through his thick skull.
Yeah. You keep investing in a good product, you make more money. Henry wants to sit at the bottom line, status quo, and just make money over fifth, slow dripping in. He doesn't want to reinvest. He's already sitting on a cash cow on a yacht somewhere, just hanging out.
Yeah, and he didn't even bother to show his face at Winter Weekend because instead he had another fucking ice cream date with his daughter. Oops, I mean wife. That he had to tend to. Apparently,
that would take balls.
Doesn't want to face criticism. Last year when he attended Winter Weekend, he got booed. Astounding levels during the Red Sox town hall. I found funny, though, about this year's town hall, though, was that Craig Breslow got cheered, but as soon as Sox management started talking, the fans were drowning them in boos. But Alex Cora, Cora got cheered. Breslow got cheered. You know, it's like I said before, we're not stupid.
No.
I mean, some are, but not everybody.
I mean, before it stops, take him to sell or something health related, because unfortunately, he's not going anywhere until something happens. He can sit around and just collect money, which is terrible. It's terrible. Now, we also saw that with the Clippers, Donald Sterling, but other stuff about him surfaced. You're speaking about Vince McMahon before. That's kind of interesting. I mean, he had different lawsuits going on. He was forced to sell. Daniel Snyder forced to sell. There's different things that could happen in the future. If he keeps the side of the street clean, though, if he doesn't have any crazy stuff going on that we don't know about, he could sit pretty and just collect from his yacht. So, I mean, I think from a Boston perspective, you're hoping that something sticks the ship, or he just sells. He just sells, because right now he's just making money, just laughing at the fans.
Well, now we have, I mentioned Kansas City and I mentioned San Francisco a few minutes ago. I'm fully convinced now that it doesn't matter who Kansas City is facing. They're just going to win, period. If they're the underdog, if they're the favorite, whatever. It doesn't matter who they fucking face. They're just going to win, period. Because Baltimore steamrolled opponents all season long, and then all of a sudden it's like they face Kansas City. They saw the big glow that Patrick Mahomes brings and the Taylor Swift experience, and then all of a sudden it's like they forgot how to play football.
Right, because I think they did.
You know, like Baltimore, you know, their strength was their run game, and they completely abandoned the run against Kansas City.
And let's be honest, Lamar Jackson wanted to be on par and wanted to show the world, hey, you know what? I can throw just as well as Patrick. Dude, use your feet, run around a little bit. No, Baltimore didn't play like Baltimore usually plays. They abandoned their own personality. They try to be someone else they're not. Kansas City was like, all right, we're just going to win. I mean, Lamar didn't even scramble. They didn't run the ball, like you said, Steve. I mean, what are they doing? What are they doing there? Kansas City's like, Kansas City's way too smart. They won that game.
I mean, they had a net differential of plus 203 this year, Baltimore did, compared to Kansas City's plus 77. Baltimore was steamrolling teams, even good teams.
Yep.
They were steamrolling them. And it's like all of a sudden they face the Magic Man and the Taylor Swift experience, and now all of a sudden they forget how to play.
Can you shake it off? Yeah.
Huh? I was really disappointed
with that.
It also
didn't help either that there was a that they had a pro Kansas City referee squad out there too. But that's beside the point.
You're gonna have that more times than not, right? I mean, yeah, I think Baltimore just didn't play the way they're usually playing, right? But like you said, they didn't run the ball at all. You can't give the ball to Mahomes. Boy, I kind of called it two Saturdays ago. I said, Detroit, just run the ball. If you get up, you guys agreed. Like, don't give it back to San Fran. I mean, Campbell should have taken the points. I know we're talking about KC. Yeah, Baltimore just played scared. I don't know. Maybe Lamar's not even near that level. Because he didn't show it to me. He didn't look like a top 10 quarterback to me. I don't know.
Well, Lamar outperformed Patrick Mahomes, actually. If you want to talk about stats, he outperformed Patrick Mahomes. 20 of 37, 272 yards. He did have that pick, but he did have a touchdown thrown. He also ran 8 times for 54 yards, whereas Patrick Mahomes, 30 of 39, 241, 1 touchdown, and then he ran 6 times for 15 yards. So, you know, stat-wise, Lamar outperformed Mahomes, but yet you take a look at the run game, And, you know, Kansas City, they were rushing, they were shoving it down Baltimore's throats with Isaiah Pacheco, 24 carries, 68 yards, and a touchdown. And yet, apart from, you take away Lamar Jackson and any of the other running backs, you only had 8 carries between the three of them.
Wow.
For like 27 yards.
Jim, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Jim, what'd you think, Jim, about maybe I misspoke. I mean, what'd you think about Lamar?
Yeah.
I know that hey, different. I didn't think Lamar looked good or acted good. I didn't think Lamar was impressive at all.
I think it's just my opinion. He'll put up great stats through the season. He'll have a big game here and there, but he's not a clutch playoff quarterback.
Yeah.
I think Steve brought up about the running game. I mean, if they can run the ball, he looks a lot better, but if they can't, his passing has gotten better, but I don't think he's a guy that's going to lead you to championships. Now, he's gonna put stats up. He's going to sell tickets. He's going to a lot of regular season games and get in the playoffs. But I don't know that he's a guy that's going to win Super Bowls.
I just thought he didn't do that well. I still think at the end of his career, when everything's said and done, I think he'll get one. I don't know if he will. I don't know if he will. I'm not an anti-Lamar guy. I just wasn't impressed. I think he was sitting in the pocket trying to prove like he could play like Mahomes. When the whole year, you know, like Steve, you said they were running him more. But, I mean, he should be looking to run more. He was sitting in the pocket all day. I know he got 54 yards. Hell, if I'm trying to beat Mahomes, if I'm Lamar, I'll run for 100 yards and get to the Super Bowl. He wanted to sit in the pocket.
You know, one of the things that I found so impressive, though, this is one of the first games that I can remember, at least, where a quarterback actually caught their own pass, like Lamar did, with the ball going off of a defender's helmet, and Lamar ends up catching it and running for 13 yards afterwards. I don't think I've ever seen a quarterback actually do that. Or if I have, I can't remember. The thing that struck me the most, though, is you take a look at a couple of his receivers. Nelson Aguilar, besides that 39-yard catch, he had nothing else after that. You know, Odell Beckham Jr., you know, a former Super Bowl champion with the L.A. Rams, only had 3 catches for 22 yards. And Zay Flowers, you know, the rookie, had an amazing game, but he had 2 crucial penalties that you just can't make in the fourth quarter.
Crucial.
You know, like the unnecessary, I think one of them was taunting, and I think the other one was like unnecessary roughness or something. And it's like, especially after he had such a huge play, it's like you can't be doing that when you're in such a clutch situation. That ultimately is what I believe screwed Baltimore over, is the fact that, you know, they had momentum going, and then all of a sudden – those 2 back-to-back penalties by Flowers, and all that momentum is immediately sucked out.
Yo, that Flowers TD. When they got all the way down to the 10, he got up, taunted the guy, hovered over his face mask, then spun the ball next to him, pushed him down. I mean, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? This is 15 minutes away from a Super Bowl team, and he's doing this. I mean, you're begging.
Yeah.
So he does that. Then he gets up and makes retribution. And then 5 minutes later, he's inches away from the goal line and he reaches out. I don't think that was a bad – it wasn't like a mental miscue by him. It was just terrible. It was a great defensive play, I think. But, yeah, at the end of the day, the history books will say Flowers messed up twice. I mean, they were going to close within three if they scored there, but they stayed, you know, down 10. But, yeah, I mean, Flowers, yeah, I mean, the receivers didn't do enough. Beckham did nothing. I mean, he's done. He's had five injuries, you know, 18, you know, drama incidents. I mean, I wouldn't bring back Beckham anywhere if I'm a playoff team. He really didn't show up. I mean, I've been over that guy for 4 or 5 years. Beckham hasn't really done much at all.
Hey, let me ask you guys something. Because I'm not on here that often, but I know all of you were involved. Lou, Alex, Steve, what y'all think about our games, gridiron game this season, where you were picking football games and you had the game lock, you had games gamble, you had games gift. What'd you think about all that stuff?
I thought it was awesome.
I would have done better.
Oh, yeah.
Lou, I think you beat Steve, though, didn't you?
Yeah, I think so. Let me double check, actually.
Don't get me wrong, Lou. I'm not trying to say that's a lot to brag about. But if you can at least beat the host, that's pretty good.
Yes.
Jim, I am one point ahead of Lou and Alex, depending on what happens with
God,
the Super Bowl.
Oh, my God, y'all got a dogfight going into the Super Bowl.
What?
Oh, yeah.
But, Jim,
I think it's been awesome. I think it's been awesome. I love the community. It's just good, man. It's good. It's a great site.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Every time you call, it's always fun to get you on the show.
Alex, the next thing coming up, it's a whole lot of fun that people really get into because there's, like, daily, hourly updates and stuff, is March Madness when we pick the tournament.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Because you may be bragging one day, and the next day you may be hiding.
or in my case, you just hide.
Well, like I tell Lou and Steve, man, Jim. I mean, I found you guys through Lou introduced me to Steve. I keep calling Saturdays. He hasn't kicked me out yet. I said, okay, let's keep calling.
Yeah. Jim, you gotta come on my show.
I'll ride this till the wheels go off.
Yeah, I love these games. They're a lot of fun. A lot of people get into them, and hell, you know, anybody can win them. Anybody can put together a pretty good season, like Jen did last season. Then, damn, she can come back and have another good season this season.
Man,
she was up there again.
By the way, guys,
UConn's number one again. Amazing. We'll see if they win it all. Impossible to repeat. But, hey,
guys,
this season I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention to it. About halfway up, there's this one guy that's up there leading every week, and I know he don't make his own picks. I know he makes them from watching TV prognosticators where they tell you how to gamble and what they would pick. That's how he makes his picks. So it kind of pissed me off, and I'm like, I need to focus on this a little bit more and see if I can't, you know, come up and put him in his place. And that was my whole motivation this season. And hell, Steve, what's he down to now, like fourth, fifth, sixth place, something like that?
Wow.
I mean, he took a fall.
Yeah, he's down to sixth after, you know, this is the same guy who decides, no, I'm gonna wait until certain injury reports come out before I make my picks.
Right.
Which, of course, he decided to do, but, you know, it's just ultimately, and by the way, that reminds me, I do have to get to work on the banner officially for you, Jim, because I think you have officially clinched.
Yeah, it's clinched.
Right.
Yeah, even if Tim and I disagree on the Super Bowl, and he's right. He still loses. Get this, guys, and this ain't the first time this has happened. This is how good this game is. All of this season, all of these games, all of the locks and the gambles and the gifts, the bowl bonanza, Kim would still lose by 1 point.
Wow.
That's hard to live with.
I never had Tim call in, man. Tim should call into the show, Steve's show. That'd be awesome.
He's too busy out buying Phillies and Sixers and Eagles memorabilia.
He's too busy willowing in Philadelphia, Starro.
This is kind of poetic justice, Steve, because I actually lost a season by 1 point to my son
one year.
Oh, boy.
Well,
my son beat me by 1 point. And trust me, he ain't never forgot it.
Yeah.
You know what, Jim? Once we get off of this, I got to ask you about the Detroit game, because talking about points with that. But go. I'm sorry. Continue.
Points on. Oh.
So Lions.
What do you mean?
You know how the Lions, they had two opportunities to go for a field goal, and they decided, we're going to go for the touchdown. Or we're going to try to convert on fourth down.
And it ultimately screwed them. To disclose full confidentiality, those games happened in the middle of a 4-day period where we had to do without Wi-Fi, phones, or anything because everything was down here. I did not see those
games. That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. So I didn't see
him. I mean,
I just know how I made my picks. Tim came to me, you know, and he's a point or two behind, and he's trying to hear what I'm going to say so he can figure out how to make his picks, probably just to pick against whatever I say so he might could get points and win. So
you always have a good appreciation for coaches. I mean, it starts at the top, and I'm a huge believer. Any Super Bowl, any conference championship, any Stanley Cup winning team, it's going to have a great coach, right? I don't know, Steve, where you were going with it, but, I mean, Campbell, Detroit got to how far they did because the guy was so ballsy. Every fourth and two, every fourth and three. He was like Doug Peterson, but actually looked tough. He was a bigger, better Doug Peterson.
Yeah.
You know,
I love Dan Campbell, but you can't underestimate Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah, it's true.
Same with Kansas City with Andy Reid. I remember telling Kim a couple of weeks ago. I said, "There's no way Kansas City's going to go through all of this and get to the Super Bowl. There ain't no way they're going to go on the road and beat Buffalo and then turn around and go on the road again and beat Baltimore. They're not going to do that. But damn if they didn't do it."
Well, that's because they had the magic man, Jim.
Maybe it's just me, but they seem to get a lot of calls.
Well, yeah, they had a pro Kansas City, and now granted, maybe this is just me being bitter because, you know, I hate Kansas City, but they had a referee crew who statistically this season were more in favor of Kansas City than they were in favor of Baltimore.
Yeah, I saw that
games
too.
That they had done. But still, you know, that doesn't if you're a rookie like Zay Flowers, you don't make the same mistakes that he made to, you know, basically screw the Ravens out of potentially tying the game, if not, you know, if not maybe having a chance to win the game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a random fan, right? Look at my perspective. I also bet the Ravens. No, actually, sorry, man, I bet the Chiefs. But no, I'm looking at the game. When you make a play like that, good, God bless you, great play, and then he gets up and spins the ball, shoves the defender down, taunts him. I mean, come on, you got to be. Are you stupid? So it's not like the refs weren't working in their favor for key plays during the Kansas City game. Baltimore shot them. Baltimore didn't play well. I don't think it was a ref thing. I mean, the Ravens did not do themselves any favors with or without the refs.
Right. But still, it doesn't help that things weren't, you know, things were already against them to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would go out on a limb and say, not much of a limb. I said it 2 weeks ago, Steve. I mean, did I think Kansas City was the best team? I right now, I think they're going to win the Super Bowl. No, I do not. There's certain factors. Reffing, Andy Reid, Mahomes. You put that together, then you throw a little Taylor Swift. The NFL would love to make money and have Taylor Swift as part of the Super Bowl. That was big, too. You can't tell me that's wrong. I mean, that's true. The NFL is going to be a lot richer with Taylor Swift during the Super Bowl.
So they've already put out numbers as to how much her being at games and her being able to promote her and other fans that she's brought in, her some of her fans that don't even know what football is, now they're watching. It's like $300-something million she's generated for the NFL.
Unbelievable. And you don't think they want that to continue into
sure
the Super Bowl? Of
and
course.
I'm sure they wanted Detroit to win so they could have used Eminem.
I was thinking that way. Look at my betting record. I'm definitely no Nostradamus, but I know that much. I know enough that if it was a close game, I knew Kansas City was somehow going to win because the betting guy, I mean, the NFL wants them in there. I mean, Taylor Swift, the cash.
So, you know, I mean, okay, if Taylor Swift is that big of a draw for the NFL, well, fine, then let's just cancel the AFC side of the season each season, and let's automatically put Kansas City in the Super Bowl every year.
Who's going to play the Chiefs? That'll be the theme of every year. Who will play against the Chiefs? I'm bitter from last year that the Eagles should have had him. But, no, I mean, this year, like I said, I don't think Baltimore played their best. And Kansas City's on a mission.
They did. I agree.
When you have
I don't think they did either.
When you have the Magic Man, I think Andy Reid's incredible. I know I'm biased as an Eagles fan. I love him. But that's a crazy combo. And the Chiefs, and now the Chiefs have their best defense in the last half decade. Last 9 or 10 years, the Chiefs' defense is really good now. So hey, they made it there. I think the Chiefs are going to win. I don't know. I can feel that.
Have we seen a spread yet? Anybody seen a spread?
-2.
That's the one.
Who's favored? Who's favored?
Niners. Niners -2.
That's almost a pick 'em.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't know how you can.
Isn't this a rematch? Hasn't Kansas City beat them before?
Mm-hmm. Well, that'd be back, what, Montana? Montana Chiefs, didn't they play Jim back in the day?
I thought they played. Now, wait a minute. Who did San Francisco play when Garoppolo was quarterback?
A good question. I don't know.
Was it Kansas City?
It was Kansas City, I think. Yeah, 31-20.
Kansas City beat them when they had 31-20.
Yeah.
And the reason why, if you think back, San Francisco was known for running the ball that season and Garoppolo not having to be forced to throw, and Kansas City took the run away from them. Now, are they going to take the run away from McCaffrey? If they do, they're going to beat San Francisco again.
It's worth noting too that Kansas City had a much better attack too. You had Tyreek Hill, you had Sammy Watkins, you had Damian Williams.
Yeah.
But if Kansas City can run the ball with McCaffrey and some reverses and stuff with Debo, then Kansas City may have their hands full.
Exactly. And
I think the whole game will come down to, can San Francisco run the ball?
I feel at least that San Francisco has a better offense this go around. They got Brandon Ayuk. You replace Kendrick Bourne with Brandon Ayuk. You still have Debo out there. You don't have Emmanuel Sanders, but you do still have George Kittle.
Yep.
You still have George Kittle. You replace.
Yep.
You replace Raheem Mostert with McCaffrey. Kansas City, though, you replace Damian Williams with Isaiah Pacheco, which is a downgrade, I feel. You still have Kelsey.
Oh, Pacheco.
Pacheco's
great. Pacheco's damn good. Put some respect.
I was going to say that. I don't know if that's a downgrade.
He's a badass. That guy's on fire. He's on fire. He's going to score.
Yeah.
He'll go for 80, 90, 100 yards in the Super Bowl.
But the other thing is, I mean, if you look at the rosters, if you look at the players, I think San Francisco's got the best roster. I mean, you look at their defense. Look at the
all
big
year.
Names they got on defense.
All year.
I mean, they got stars. They got stars everywhere.
Look, Green Bay had him on the ropes, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. Detroit, Jesus, I mean, come on. They should have won that game, I thought.
But they're
very vulnerable.
But
they're not
this
big, bad defense. But they're not this big, bad defense. Chase Young's been awful. Joey Bosa, sure. But, like, San Fran, I keep hearing all this big, bad thing about their defense. They can get lit up. Mahomes could score 35, 40 points on them.
Possibly, but
Dre Greenlaw may pick him off twice.
Yeah, and it's worth noting too. They didn't have Javon Kinlaw back then. They didn't have Chase Young. They didn't have Javon Hargrave. So there's this San Francisco defense ain't the same defense that it was that got 31 points put up on them.
And I can tell you a difference between Detroit and Kansas City.
Yeah.
Detroit's offensive line is better than Kansas City's.
Much better. Detroit's got a great line.
And it's
their top three lines.
It's worth
Eagles, Detroit,
it's also,
Cowboys maybe. Detroit's got a great line.
It's also worth noting, too, that Kansas City doesn't have the Honey Badger to save them this year. They don't have Tyrann Mathieu, who was a huge part of their defense in that Super Bowl.
Yeah. Man, that's painful. San Fran talks so much crap about being so much better than everyone. I don't know. Who are you guys picked? I mean, I'm going. I think the Chiefs are going to win that.
I don't know yet. I hadn't thought about it enough. Just first instincts is I don't think Kansas City can. I think it's Cinderella time. I think it's about to strike midnight on them. I think San Francisco will win because they've just got better players.
Yeah.
But. It scares me that it always seems like Kansas City gets every crucial call.
They really do get a lot
right.
of calls. They really do. There really is a 12th man wearing stripes every day when it comes to Kansas City. They always have the refs.
I mean, I look at it like this. as far as quarterback goes, quarterback obviously is Kansas City. Running back, I would give the edge to San Francisco just slightly with McCaffrey. Wide receivers, I would probably say San Francisco because, you know, this wide receiver core, even though they got back Mecole Hardman, Hardman hasn't really done much this year. Sky Moore and, you know, Rashee Rice, if anything, has probably been their top receiver Marquez Valdes-Scantling, actually.
This is the worst receiving core of any Super Bowl Kansas City team.
I'll say this about the Niners. If Kyle Shanahan's smart and their defensive coordinator is smart, they'll go dig up old tapes of the Patriots defense under Belichick playing Mahomes and how you should defend the Kansas City offense. Double team Kelce. I don't give a crap what else you do. Take Kelce out of the game and you'll win.
It looks like Jerick McKinnon has been activated for Kansas City, so he is likely to possibly play in the Super Bowl. They may be without Joe Tooney though, with a torn pectoral.
They were just fine last week. I mean, yeah, that's a big loss, but it's not going to end their Super Bowl. I like what Jim said. I mean, right.
But
there. Game plan against Kelce. That's their guy. Point blank. Obviously, Mahomes.
Yeah.
It
used to be Tyreek Hill, and if you watch any of the old NFL films, where the Patriots played Kansas City and the New England would double team Tyreek Hill, and they had players mic'd up like the McCourty twins and stuff. You would hear them talking to Tyreek Hill saying, "Not today." And Tyreek Hill would say, "Y'all taking me out." I mean, it's obvious what New England was doing. They were going to take out the biggest threat and make you beat them some other way. And that's what San Francisco needs to do now. Who does Mahomes always look for? He always looks for Kelce when he needs something. Take him out and take your chances with the others. And if some of them have a big day and beat you, God bless them.
So be it. You got to take
Kelce out of it.
Let a role player beat you. It's like if you, you know, double team Kobe. Double team
Iverson.
If
that happens, it happens. There ain't nothing you can do about it.
Double team a star shooter. Let someone else. Double team Reggie Miller. Let someone else on the Pacers beat you.
You got to eliminate.
You got to cut the head off the snake. Eliminate Kelce.
Something that could be potentially a factor on the Kansas City defense. That one of their edge rushers, Charles Omenihu, sustained a torn ACL in the win against Baltimore, so he's obviously out for the Super Bowl. That could be big when it comes to potentially getting to Brock Purdy.
Purdy.
Considering Omenihu is probably one of their better edge rushers.
Yeah.
Another thing I would think about, if you're thinking in terms of trying to figure out who's going to win or the spread or something, I would think about in terms, if I'm looking at the Niners and their defense, because everything for Kansas City is probably going to be dictated by the offense and Mahomes. Do they have the type of players on defense with their defensive end rushers and their linebackers, they can contain Mahomes and not let him get outside and buy more time? If they can keep him in the pocket and double-team Kelce, they're going to beat the Chiefs if they can do that. Now, they may not can do that. Mahomes may get out and run all over the damn field, and then Kansas City's going to win. It's just you have to think of these little things that matter, and the O-line and defensive line. I mean, I think San Francisco's D-line and linebackers are way better than Kansas City's O-line.
Way better.
Yeah. So
no, and you know, at three,
and
at
a lot,
three,
and, you know, that in all honesty, that's where a lot of games are won. Really, is up front, and
of course,
you know, and then after it's over, everybody says, "Oh, well, the O line was better." But going into the game, everybody's talking about, you know, all the offensive stars, Mahomes and Brock Purdy and McCaffrey and, you know,
yeah,
Kelsey and all these people. They don't talk
yeah
about the big guys up front. But that's where a lot of games are won and lost.
Even from, you know, early on, even from the Packers with Mike Holmgren, but Andy Reid, throughout his coaching career, he's always said, you know, championships or, you know, division titles, the big games, they're won in the trenches, a.k.a. offensive line, defensive line. So, yeah, for better, I mean, Eagles have fallen short, but, yeah, you know what, most draft days, they're taking DN, they're taking offensive guards, they're taking Jason Kelce's. They're taking Brandon Graham.
Yeah.
You know, big people.
And,
big,
that, and
big
I was
going to
say that about the Eagles. I was going to say that about the Eagles. I mean, right now all you're hearing about is Jalen Hurts, A.J. Brown. But it starts
yeah
up front with that O-line.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, I think San Fran has a shot because they have a great D-line. You can have all the skill possession people in the world, but big people beat little people, especially in the NFL. I mean,
yes, they do.
If
speaking of
time,
which, Jim, there is a rumor, by the way. You talk about having a good offensive line, Jim. I hate to get off the Super Bowl here for a second, but I heard a rumor that the Patriots may be going with Joe Alt as the number three pick.
Third pick.
If Elliot Wolf is in charge.
And John Henry?
God. But they're not gonna extend Mac Jones. So you're not gonna keep your quarterback and you're not gonna draft a quarterback.
No, they'll probably take Bo Nix with the second round pick.
No, Bo will get drafted late in the first. And,
I like
and it will be a bust. It will be a bust. He's not gonna be any good, but somebody's gonna draft him late in the first.
Sorry, 35. He had 19 years in college.
I would look at it like this: if they're gonna end up wasting every Patriot fan's time and take a lineman, then trade out of the number three pick.
You got to be kidding me. Quarterback.
Trade out of the number three pick if you're gonna waste all of your fans' time, and take a lineman. Then trade down to number five or trade down to number six, where
or trade your number three or trade your number three pick to the Bears for Justin Fields
and let them have
the first pick and the third pick. Let them draft Caleb Williams, and then they have the third pick too.
Yeah.
I had seen a mock draft or a mock trade
that had Justin Fields the number nine and in the future going to New England for the number three pick.
Yeah, but it's hard. I mean, I've seen so many damn mock drafts, I don't even click the links no more to read them.
Yeah, I don't do that mock draft stuff anyway.
You know, it's like I could go put one out and put a link on Twitter or something. Now everybody's going to click and see my mock draft. Like, who the hell am I?
Well, this wasn't a mock draft. This wasn't a mock draft. This was a trade scenario that was brought up by one of the NFL.
From who? Was it from Mel Kiper?
No. I forget which NFL media guy was, but it was one of the big media guys.
It's just somebody that's got a bigger title than the people on this podcast.
It sounds like
Kiper. All it is is his opinion. That's all it is. And unless it comes from somebody like Kiper, or what's the other guy's name? McShay?
McShay, yeah.
or somebody that's way up there at CBS or somewhere. I don't pay attention to it. Don't pay attention to it, because most of them are homers. Most of them are homers. They're trying to they've got their favorite team, and they're trying to do a mock draft where their favorite team looks really, really good.
Also, no different than you, me, or Steve, or Jim, or Lou. I mean, seriously,
right.
Some of these
exactly. We could have done a mock draft tonight and done just as good.
Yeah, sure.
Again, I always prepped my fantasy baseball draft from Yahoo, and it's like some people are like, "Oh my God, I should take my." I said, "You're listening. You're reading notes. The person writing for Yahoo or CBS most times is an intern who's like 19 years old. I'll take my two cents over there.
But I just, you know, I read something today that said Elliot Wolf, who's a former executive for the Green Bay Packers, who is now seemingly running things for the Patriots, it sounds like, because the offensive coach that they hired was formerly with Green Bay, and now it sounds like they're trying to hire Ben Yabba Dabba McAdoo to be an offensive assistant, who was also with Green Bay.
See, my joke's better, Steve. You did the yabba dabba. I say Ben McAdoo, the illegitimate brother of NBA star Bob McAdoo.
Yes. Yeah. See, I wouldn't know that. So.
Yeah.
Bob McAdoo could shoot now. Bob McAdoo could shoot.
I remember Ben McAdoo wearing those $9 Kohl's shades. He's wearing those sunglasses that night.
Don't you think with Belichick out, not being in charge of everything now, though, there's going to be a little more input from Papa Kraft and his son? If they want Mac to be the quarterback, there would be a contract extension. If they think it's time to move on, they're going to say draft a damn quarterback.
There's no way Mac's going to be the quarterback next year. There's no way.
Yeah, you would think so.
There's no way, Mayo.
Because the fifth-year option was declined. So,
all right. So if it ain't gonna be Mac, and it's not gonna be Bailey Zappe. It ain't gonna be him.
No.
He was just in the right place, the right time to get a little publicity and get to play a little bit. It ain't gonna be him. He's not a franchise quarterback.
Then you gotta go draft one.
I know they worked closely because they were coaching the Senior Bowl earlier today. I know they worked closely with, I think it was Spencer Rattler and whoever the quarterback was from Tennessee.
From Liberty. What was his name?
Yeah, I forget.
He played college ball
like Wilson
at Liberty.
Or something.
He played at Liberty. I can't remember his name. He's kind
Joe
of
Milton. Like
the
Joe
he's
Milton.
He's kind of like the new age, you know, where they run or throw.
Yeah, but neither one's to play at three.
It was Joe Milton,
if they,
I think.
Milton's already – he got drafted last year, right? No, that was Hooker.
No.
Joe Milton.
Yeah, that was Hooker.
There's no way – I mean, the Patriots have to take a quarterback at three. I mean, no, Mac is not. He hasn't been the answer for 3 years.
When teams make these coaching changes, new coaches and especially new offensive coordinators, they want their own guy. They want their own quarterback.
Yeah. They will clean shots. They don't care where someone's drafted. They'll cut someone.
Don't you think Gerard and Alex are going to want their own new quarterback to work with?
Yeah,
exactly.
And they're going to take him in this draft.
Exactly.
And it's worth noting, too, that Alex Van Pelt is also a former quarterback. So, you know, he specializes in working with quarterbacks.
Yeah, I'm telling you right now, read all you want to. I'm telling you right now, it's going to be Jaden Daniels from LSU. That's who it's going to be, the high trophy guy.
I
that's who
it
it's going to be.
Steve, just in case.
Because Caleb Williams is going to go first. Then the kid from North Carolina is going to go second. He's going to be a bust. He ain't gonna do nothing.
Trubisky,
but he'll go second.
Because
he's a big, big, tall, white quarterback that sticks in the pocket for the most part. So that looks good to a lot of teams. And then New England will take Daniels, and it will be the steal of the draft. He'll be the best quarterback out of this draft.
They have to take a quarterback.
Yeah. I really do hope it's Daniels, because looking at the numbers, I mean, obviously, you know, it's easy to just go based off of numbers, but I mean, he had probably the biggest improvement out of any quarterback this year in the top three.
He's from the SEC. That's my home. So I see these guys in the SEC.
He battles for real.
And that's why I'm telling you, Bo Nix is a fraud. He sucked at Auburn, and he left to transfer to Oregon. He got in a great system out there under a great coach, and he looks like he's a superstar. But I saw him at Auburn. He sucks.
Yeah. No, seriously.
But
yes.
Jaden Daniels is for real.
SEC, every week's a battle. Those guys are war. They're battle tested. He's ready to go in prime time right away. Plug and play him.
Yep.
He can win 10 games next year. Mayo, first year. I mean, no brainer. You got to take Daniels.
I agree. If they don't take Daniels, the only other possibility is
panic.
That they got a trade in the works. They got a trade in the works for somebody like Josh Fields. And at three, they take Marvin Harrison Jr.
Oh, yeah.
Bingo. That would be my other preferred option. If they have a trade in the works, because Justin Fields supposedly they're looking for a second or third round pick for Fields. If you can land Fields, take Marvin Harrison Jr. with the number three pick, there you go.
Ohio State combo.
I would prefer Daniels.
We're talking this late,
but
and it's 12 p.m. Can we extend the show until 1 a.m. or not? Another hour?
Yeah.
Seriously.
No, I wish.
I can't do that tonight because I got in trouble last night because I'm hosting a online game in our other Whispers groups for a Survivor game, and I ended up on a three-way call with a couple of the players last night till 5 a.m., so I'm in the doghouse, so I can't do that again tonight.
What?
okay.
Jim, the other guy's know about this, but I'm, of course, doing a Super Bowl pregame of my own next Saturday from, for you, I think it's 3 to 5, with me it's 4 to 6, so hopefully you can join in.
Okay. I'll tell you what. Get Steve to send me a reminder, and maybe we can both join you.
All right.
Yeah,
so
I'll send Jim a reminder.
And maybe we drag Alex's ass with us. Who knows?
Oh, Alex is a regular on the show. Alex is a regular.
Oh, okay.
I'll be on the
block,
right. Steve. I'll be there.
Okay.
Alex is a regular.
Yeah. Get Steve to stay on me. He's kind of like. He kind of keeps me going with everything. He reminds me of what I got going this day and that day and what all. So just, you know, shoot him an email, text, or whatever and say, don't forget, you know, remind Jim about Saturday and both of y'all come on.
All right. 3 to 5 for you, 4 to 6 for me.
Okay.
I think
all
it's 3 to 5, right?
That's actually a good time for me.
You are 3 to 5, right?
It's I'm central. Right now it's almost 11.
Okay.
I got like 4 minutes left till we're through here. Yeah.
Okay.
So Steve, that's up to you to remind me.
Yep, I'll make a note.
Steve, make a note.
Yeah, do like I do. I put it on my phone on my Google Calendar. That's the only way I remember stuff. But we're down to about 3 minutes, guys. So it's been a great show tonight. I had fun hanging out with you. You always make me smarter listening to what you guys think. You bring up stuff
yeah.
that I didn't think about. So,
yeah,
it's been fun, and I'll try to do it. Maybe we'll do it right after the Super Bowl, and we can go back over and analyze what went right and what went wrong for those two teams.
Yeah.
There you go. Always great. Always good.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
By the way, just to note, now granted, this is a video game, but the Madden simulation does predict that San Francisco will beat Kansas City.
And Kardashian will score too.
Okay.
So
I think
it's granted it's just a video game, but and also the game winning play will come off of a former teammate of Pat Mahomes in Chevarius Ward, who had won the Super Bowl. I think it was Mahomes' first Super Bowl that he won. That
wow.
Ward was on the team for. So, it should be interesting.
Anybody real quick? We got 2 minutes. Anybody real quick? I know somebody had the spread. Did you see the over under? What anybody know what the over under is?
Hold on, I got it right here. I'm on CBS Sports Line. I pay like 20 a month.
Yeah.
It's the spread's 47.5.
How much?
Ooh,
47.5, 47.5. So over 48, under 48.
My first thought is
yeah,
it's going
it's,
over that.
And the spread is now 2.5 for San Francisco as well.
Okay, so money is going on San Francisco.
Yeah.
Yep, that's what it looks like. Money line is minus 127.
Okay. I think I'd go over on the points. I still don't know what I'd do on the spread yet. But I think I'd go over on the points.
Yeah.
And as far as the matchup for ESPN, ESPN is predicting 60-40% for San Francisco.
Yeah, let them try to beat Mahomes and Reed. that's the number that talks.